Oh no.
Oh no.
Okay, you're fine now. You both just chipmunked for like 10 seconds.
I just activated recording. That's probably why.
Okay.
Cool.
That makes me feel a little better.
Welcome to Preferred Enemies, the Warhammer 40K podcast. That's the last line of defense for the Golden Throne. I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
Dennis.
No, Richard. We have traded Richard for Dennis today because we have traded... Hello. We have traded our Orc Codex review for Custodes Codex review. Remember, these came out the same day. And we talked about the Orc Codex in our last episode.
I mean, we could always try to have put them together by like getting Gazgul and like paint him gold, and or get like Trajan and paint his face green and then have them fist bump.
The thing I love now is between the pre-orders and like the announcement of the pre-orders and the pre-orders like that, this codex still hasn't technically been released yet. So this episode's still good.
Yes. I mean,
I've got my pre-order in.
However, at this point, I think between the reviews that have already happened that came out like the day of pre-order, and also there's been some massive leaking of the codex, as it apparently, you know, somebody in distribution got photos of it. So a lot of this is already known, but we do want to talk about it. But part of talking about that, we'll have to wait because we are going to be talking about what is possibly the biggest controversy that has hit Warhammer 40K discussion in recent months. And that is, of course, the announcement that the Emperor's Children are not actually in the Chaos Space Marine Codex and that they're getting an index instead.
Wait, where's the codex?
Sad day for everyone.
That wasn't the big issue that everyone has been talking about, because I've certainly been kind of focused on it.
Where's the codex?
Well, the Codex isn't out yet. The Chaos Space Marine Codex is most likely our next upcoming
No, I mean
codex.
The Emperor's Children Codex.
So we'll be talking. That's one thing I do want to discuss. This is the announcement. You won't find – it's play the cook that. So the announcement was on April 16th, and it's Play the Chosen of Slaanesh and Chaos Space Marines armies with Index Emperor's Children. We recently announced the imminent arrival of Chaos Hordes, mighty enough to darken the galaxy forever. There are two new Chaos Lords coming to ply their malevolent trade against a host of returning villains, but what you won't find in the new codex are a certain body-snatching duelist and his ear-splitting bandmates. Lucius the Eternal, Noise Marine squads are not going to be in the new codex. We had some discussion based on the number of detachments and what detachments had been spelled out, and at first I was like, well, that seems unlikely, but when you actually did the math and worked it out, it's like, no, maybe there isn't an Emperor's Children Codex. These are not in the Chaos Space Marine Codex, and instead we are getting an index with updated data sheets for the both of them. They do mention a guide to fielding an Emperor's Children army, fixing up your keywords, which is basically pick Slaanesh. Duh. Otherwise, you're free to use whatever you want from the buffet of units and detachments that is Chaos Codex Space Marine, or that is Codex Chaos Space Marines. Lucius has to be your warlord if you have him. The one thing that there's a couple of things about this already that kind of catch me. First off, they mentioned that you'll be taking units and detachments from Codex Chaos Space Marines, which seems to imply that this index, and I'm air quoting this with my finger quoting this as hard as I can, this index does not have an Emperor's Children detachment in it, does not have Emperor's Children stratagems. You are piggybacking on top of the Chaos Space Marine Codex.
One thing I want to go back. So is Lucius have to be your warlord?
If he is in your army.
Oh, yes. Okay. If he's in your army, okay, that's fine.
if it's like the World Eaters Index, and granted, editions are different, design's a little bit different now. If it's similar to how the World Eaters Index was two units. It was Karn the Betrayer and Chaos Berserkers. You could only take Karn if you took Berserkers. You could take other Chaos Lords, for example, a Chaos Lord on foot, and take Berserkers as units.
That doesn't sound
around
very
them.
World Eaters, you know.
I know, it's crazy. So it was very limited. There was no army rule for it. It was, you didn't get like a Legion detachment or anything. You just said, here are these two units. Part of the reason why the units, I think they're giving them new data sheets, is because there's no specific detachment rule or Legion rule or anything like that. I wouldn't be surprised if the units got better. That was the time period where Berserkers got to fight twice. So a single Berserker had like 14 attacks or something like that. Something insane. So I wouldn't be surprised if they take Noise Marines and Lucius and buff them up a little bit, and make them kind of fit in with the existing detachments that come out in the new book. And then, you know, down the line, 6 months, whenever their new book is ready, it may be longer than that. I don't know. They'll release the new designs for the new models, the new index, expand it out, and then you'll get, you know, a full detachment or two. So,
right. Yeah. And they do specify these have the Dark Pax rule. So this is specifically made to interact with the Chaos Space Marine Codex. As far as when we're getting a new Emperor's Children book, I know at the beginning of the year when we were looking at the wish list, looking forward and kind of trying to guess, there was that redacted spot on the list of codexes, which would be coming after Sororitas and Gene Stealer Cults. That does not appear to be the Emperor's Children Codex, as much as we may have wished it to be so. It's also not likely to be Dark... Yeah, I know. So do I. It's also not likely to be the Dark Mechanicus Codex, because it sounds like that is being rolled into the Chaos Space Marine Codex from other announcements. Well, because like Cult of Vashtor is going to be in that book.
Oh, yep. Gotcha.
No, I've heard a lot about it being an Agents of the Imperium book, mm-hmm. you know, an Inquisition book, which is great. I think that here's the thing: the army design, you know, and philosophy for how to build a faction actually supports having a faction like that now. So you can actually take four units assassins out of the Codex together, which you couldn't do in the previous Agents of the Imperium. So I don't know. I've heard rumors that stuff like Death Watch and maybe Grey Knights get rolled into that. I think
I've heard as well.
I would be for that because in the early days, Inquisition was tied to Grey Knights.
Or Grey Knights.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. And then Death Watch works closely with them now when they came out. So it all makes sense to me. Although it would have an Angels of Death feel, wouldn't it?
I would be disappointed for Grey Knights players who are looking for a new codex and potentially like range refresh. If they get rolled into a sub book like this, I doubt they're getting any new models. Like, that's why I'm a little bit disappointed in that perspective.
Have you seen this edition? It's very rare to get new models.
Unless you're getting a brand new line.
Every faction has gotten a new model with their codex release. I think.
Yeah. we'll go with that. We'll talk about that in the second half.
Sure. The Custodes got a new model. A new model.
Orcs got a new model.
Exactly.
Mechanicus got a new model.
GW.
Wait, was
would
it one or three guys
us
in a trench coat?
Well, depending on how you model it, it could be. He's referencing a picture I found. Somebody did a Sidonian Skatros that is literally three Skitarii in a large trench coat, and it is beautiful. I love it. It also probably
it's
wouldn't
way
go
more stable
the way the existing one. Yeah, yeah.
It's way easier to store.
but But no, at the end of this article, they said, you might think this heralds the imminent announcement of a new codex, perhaps one bound in human skin and painted in garish colors. But if so, it's too distant for even Warhammer community's astropathic choir to detect any signals. And we got a stern talking to from the Inquisitors for even trying. We can only assume we're safe for the foreseeable future, but if that changes, we'll let you know. That's different than the World Eaters announcement, because the World Eaters announcement was like immediately followed up by, there is a World Eaters Codex coming. It will probably be around the end of the year. We will be revealing updates to it as we go. And instead, this is just like, yeah, this eventually, maybe, yeah, but we're not going to say anything.
My thoughts are it's going to be when Fulgrim's released, and they might not have Fulgrim ready yet because they just did the Forge World Uber Fulgrim. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting how they're taking a different tactic, because with the World Eaters release, they were very upfront about the designing the models, designing the weapons, providing updates on all of that. I'm kind of surprised they're not taking that opportunity to do this with the World Eaters as well. Of like, hey, here's what
the Emperor's Sonic Children
weapons look like. Emperor's Children, yep, the whatever, Slaanesh, who cares?
Two of the three of us do.
But like an opportunity to be like, here's the new designs for the models, here's the new weapon designs, here's what Lucius might look like. I'm surprised they're not doing that aspect of it, but I also know they're doing like four or five ongoing here's new model series. So
right. And to your point, Kevin, if I think about it, Sisters of Battle, it was a few months before they came out when we started getting the leaks, or not the leaks, but yeah, GW posting things. Votan, that was about 6 days. I think it's April to October is about 6 months. I'm not doing the math right now. So
sure, we'll
I mean, it could still be this year if we start seeing something around middle of the year, or maybe next year, hopefully.
So I will say next year. Codex release schedule has slowed down a little bit, which is good.
I'm thankful.
even though we did just get a double hit. They seem to be slowing down the release a little bit. There is a lot of other new models that are in the production pipeline for other games. You have all of the new stuff for AOS. You have all of the old models being reprinted for the old world. You've got the Horus Heresy line all going to plastic. So I would guess that the production pipeline means that they won't get new World Eaters for a while. And that kind of sucks, because that means that you're just living off of a PDF and a data sheet for a lot longer than World Eaters had to.
The plus side, Kevin, if this index gets put in the app, we don't have to like buy a codex to use it.
Well, yeah, actually, you will. There's just not enough units.
You still have to buy the attachment. You just have to live with like this extra couple data sheets floating around. It's not the worst situation. In a lot of ways, I think this actually makes a lot of sense, and I kind of wish they had done this at the same time as the World Eaters, even though that means that it would have been a much longer time period for these units floating around separately. Because if you looked at the 9th edition Chaos Codex, Emperor's Children did not fit with anything else they were doing. They stuck out. How many places are there exceptions where it's like, hey, if you choose this legion, you have to do this, 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 and this, and ignore all of these other rules? It never fit with the design of, you know, pulling all the cult legions out and giving them their own codex allows Chaos Space Marines to be a ton more flexible, where you can do Renegades, you can do Lost Legions, you can do Cult Mechanicus stuff. You can do a lot more than six, but one, like, group of units that's like, hey, these guys are still slightly different, don't fit, just created a weird situation in the codex. So I'm glad they're pulling it out. I'm glad they're doing it now. I hope Emperor's Children's players don't mind living, you know, off of some random data sheets for a little while, and then hopefully they get something sooner than later, but I would say next year. I just don't see it this year.
I'll just say, as someone who just has dabbled in them, I'm okay, because it just means I'll just keep them on the shelf and play other things like Votan and Dark Angels.
Absolutely.
But if this was my main army, I would be hot.
Considering I just finished playing Emperor's Children in our narrative league,
you're hot.
It is I'm not hot. I am a little disappointed, but I can't say I'm surprised. I'm glad they confirmed it. a good several weeks before the Chaos Codex comes out. I'm guessing it's going to be a May release because they're going to want to keep June and July free for AOS. So
yes,
that's my guess, is that this is probably going to be in a month. I have no hidden information or anything. This is just spitballing, but I'm going to say by the end of May, we'll have Chaos Space Marines out. But I'm glad to have kind of advance warning. Also, this does imply that if they are getting a new codex eventually, which I think end of year is not unlikely, it means that we'll be getting a new Plastic Lucius, we'll be getting new Plastic Noise Marines. That I'm all for, especially Noise Marines that are actually, well, yes, and Fulgrim, but I'm more specifically talking about re-sculpts. And I'm thinking, not only would we get a new Lucius, which I love that model, but it is way overdue for a revamp. Having Noise Marines that aren't just add-on bits to existing Marines, but are actually sculpted from the ground up to be a unique thing would be cool.
I don't have those issues with mine. My Lucius looks very nice and pretty. My Noise Marines are very unique because I use the 30K models for all of them. Oh.
Which is fine. And I think that's cool, too. But yeah, and I would love to see Noise Marines that are based off of the cacophony that they did for Horus Heresy, because I have a unit of those as well, and I think they look great.
They do look great. They're awesome. They're awesome models.
I want more guitars, and maybe a saxophone would be cool. And
I don't know if they're going to go. I don't know if they're going to go campy like that. I think they're going to.
I want my rock band.
More grimdark. I know you do. I know you do.
Grimdark rock band
is for.
If I can't make a unit that looks like they're jamming out Careless Whisperer, then I don't want it.
So, Kevin, you're saying if they make that, then you'll start your Emperor's Children army?
I mean, I have all of the other Cult Legions and all the other Primarchs, so probably because I have low impulse control.
Sure, and then you'll start like painting it after you paint your Votan?
Sure.
Okay.
Hey, you know what? I will start building my Votan at some point this year. I will make that
eventually,
promise.
Eventually, yes.
I will start building those models.
Maybe take Votan to the Grand Narrative?
No. I'm taking my World Leaders to the Grand Narrative because I've got my Angron conversion I want to do.
Okay. So that's your October thing is Angron?
November here's the thing.
Sorry.
Here's the thing. The last 2 months have been nothing but me trying to like crank out things on the 3D printer, so I'm just looking forward to like not having deadlines in like a few weeks. So
yeah, and November is a very long deadline away.
It's gonna be here a lot faster than I anticipate.
Fair,
yeah. Time accelerates when you have a deadline.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe this isn't the biggest controversy, but I do think it's worth discussing that this approach is. Like, when I, you know, at first I was like, yeah, but we're not going to get a detachment. But then I thought about the World Eater situation. I'm like, yeah, but it's kind of fair. You know, it's not too indifferent from what happened with them. So,
yeah.
Disappointing, but not surprising.
Right. And with the promise of something is coming, they're being very coy about, maybe, but not yet. I've even seen some suggestions that it won't be until like 11th edition.
Don't think it'll be that long.
Yeah. No, I don't think it will be. We've still got 2 years of this edition. Well, I've also seen suggestions that this could be a chance with all the cult legions moved out, that this could be a chance for them to basically split Chaos Demons up the way they have in Age of Sigmar, where it's like basically everything is a Demonkin army.
Yeah.
That is completely rumor. There is no evidence of that right now, because it would require things like maybe Bellicor to get rolled into Codex Chaos Space Marines, and we definitely haven't seen any sign of that. So it's theoretically possible. If you see Bellicor in Codex Chaos Space Marines, then I would say that's very good evidence that they are splitting those off into their own books. But as of right now, I would just assume that Death Guard, Thousand Sons, World Eaters, and Emperor's Children will be their own books for just the Marine components, just the mortal components of those particular god factions, rather than being like Gestalt books. Which is a shame. I think Gestalt books would be cool.
Absolutely.
But
yeah, we'll see. It's definitely an interesting way that they're taking the Chaos Marine book and kind of, I think removing the cult legions completely out of the book allows them to do a lot more things with the Chaos Space Marine Codex and allows it to be the flexible, like, hybrid armies that you see in the lore. You know, like, I hope, and again, spitballing, no idea what's actually in there. I would love to see more of, like, the Chaos Renegade stuff included in the Chaos Codex. You know, and we know that there's going to be more, like, Cult Mechanica stuff in there, or Dark Mechanica stuff. So, like, I'm excited for how this direction. It kind of stinks that they're not giving us all the World Eater stuff now, because I would love to have it all now, but yeah, at least the promise down the line that you're going to get something is good.
So here's hoping. Here's, you know, it's really what this means is nothing really changes for Emperor's Children other than we do get access to a bunch of detachments, but there's a promise of cool stuff down the road.
Speaking of nothing changing, that's probably a good segue, right?
Oh, God, yes. yeah, so now the time to dig into the actual controversy of the last couple of weeks. So, Codex Adeptus Custodes is out, and one of the things in it, or it is out for pre-order. I don't think it's actually in hands yet. It may be by the time you hear this. But some content from inside has been leaked. And one of the things that was leaked was a 2-page story spread in the Codex. And having a preview of the Codex provided to us by Games Workshop in exchange for a fair and honest review, I can confirm this story is legit. It is from the Codex. I know it's been photographed, but I've got my preview copy here in front of me. And yes, this story is in here. And it is a story about a custodian taking a rather unique approach to winning a blood game, which is basically the custodies' war games to determine how easily could somebody breach the Imperial Palace. And this custodian's technique is brilliant. I love everything about this story because they decide to basically what happens if we teleport a nuke right in front of the Emperor? Like an exterminatus grade, like cyclonic warhead. It's a glorious tactic. But that's not the part that people are really talking about. The part that people are talking about is that the custodian's name is Kaladis Taravalia Kesh, and she is a woman. And not like hinted at vaguely. No, it refers to her as she or her throughout the entire story. The captain on the ship that she has taken control of refers to her as my lady. Like, there's no question. Custodian Kesh is a woman. She is a female Adeptus Custodes. And the internet has gone insane because of this. So on one hand, you have people who are celebrating this change or this revelation that there are female custodies. There are people who are like, oh, this is cool. This is cool representation. It's cool to see, like, there's no, you know, see that there's this character who is female, but is part of this, like, badass group of like, super warriors that are, like, even better than Space Marines. And there are people who are complaining that this is the worst thing that GW has ever done, that this is just proof that they are bowing to the whims of current cultural direction and that they're trying to pander to people who don't even want to play or, you know, who aren't even interested, or that there are tourists entering the hobby and that these tourists don't really care about the game, don't really play the game, but just want to, you know, ruin everything for everyone else. And I would like to point out in that regard, we're going to try to keep this as nice as possible. I know, Kevin, you have already said there's things you would like to say that you're going to hold back on.
Yeah, I mean, we want to keep this as a welcoming space, and we do genuinely want, like, all different perspectives, and, like, we want everyone to feel welcome. So I don't want to just start yelling profanities.
I'll toss in something to lean on, not lean on, but go off of that, is we've been saying for years to keep this hobby alive, you have to get new blood into it. And this is one of the reasons why we've been not mad, but saying, GW, your prices are a little too high. There's a really high, steep point of entry, which they didn't tell us directly, but they've kind of countered with, well, here's Kill Team. Here's like boarding. Here's smaller games to kind of give you that feel and let you
here's
slowly
combat
build
patrol,
up.
Stuff like
yeah,
that.
Combat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they are listening and trying, but to get to that wider audience, you have to do something to entice them to come in and want to play your game. And I will be honest. I'll say my two points here. One is I don't care if a custode's male or female. In my mind is if you're a custode, you were created for this purpose. Can you get the job done? If so, awesome. You're a custode. I mean, 90% of them wear helmets anyway, it looks like. And then I'll say part two of that is, being honest, that's one of the reasons why I liked Eldar, or I liked Sisters of Battle, because especially with Eldar, you had, I guess you could easily say, well, here's the male and female Eldar. And I'm like, cool, I can build both. And that's kind of what one of the factors that drew me to those armies is they were different. They weren't as rigid. Well, I guess Sisters of Battle are kind of rigid, but but for the most part, it's good to have something that brings others into the hobby so the hobby can still kind of grow, because I don't want to say it's stagnant now, because I see a lot of people playing, but it's good to still, I guess, grow past that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, so the thing that I had that I did want to say is there's I guess really kind of just a couple of things that I wanted to point out that are kind of my thoughts on it. GW is a corporation. Their canon is like under their control. But if you wanted to play a female custodian army 3 weeks ago, you could have. You just make the models or you build up your own fluff. If you want to play an all male custodian army now, you still can. Like, I have a Chaos Tau World Leaders army. That is nowhere in canon. That's a thing that I made up. That's part of the hobby. So, like, just because they've confirmed that this exists or doesn't exist doesn't mean you have to follow that. Like, this is a war game. The fluff and the canon and everything behind it doesn't actually matter, because it's all like it's all background stitched together to explain why toy soldiers are banging together on the table. Like, that's all it is. So if it changes, it doesn't really matter. You can ignore it or whatever. The other thing that I'll point out is that GW, and this is a thing that I've really learned from watching a lot of like old Hammer YouTube channels, Arbiter Ian, Snipe and Web, Jordan Sorcery, a couple of these others that like explain the history of 40K and how it's evolved. This entire canon is made up of retcons. 8-bound did not exist in canon 3 years ago, and canonically now they've been here for 10,000 years. Storm Eagles and Storm Ravens and Storm Hawks have always existed. Paragon Warsuits have always existed. The Leagues of Votan have always existed, even though they've only entered canon in the last few years. It's fine. It really doesn't matter. Ignore the parts you want to ignore. Go with the pieces that inspire you to build an army that you want to play, that you want to have fun with. And for the love of God, do not harass people about any of this. If you see something that's different, don't harass GW employees. Don't harass people online. Just play the game and have fun. I don't think that really needs to be explained, but my God, I've been on the internet for the last couple of weeks, and I am so very tired of the conversation around this. Just take the pieces of the canon that you want to use and use them, and let other people have fun with their toys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, absolutely. I wanted to talk about this from a sense of like the background, because one of the complaints I have seen raised in the nature of this being a retcon is that, well, at no point did GW ever say this, and all of a sudden we have this story dropped on us, And also a tweet that they posted saying, since the first of the 10,000 were created, there have always been female custodians. And there was a second tweet that had something very similar saying that there have always, that the 10,000 have always contained male and female custodians, which is admittedly a retcon. But as you said, there's plenty of other things that have been retconned that nobody seemed to have any big deal, you know, have any big issue with. This one is different because it involves bringing female characters into what was seen as a traditionally male-only organization. And admittedly, in previous versions of this codex, it did specifically refer to that the custodies were often taken from the sons of noble families. To be absolutely fair, there is a little precedent for it being a male-only organization in previous iterations of the fluff. But as you said, fluff changes. And I know some people have been very upset, and I can see the argument of, well, that we should have seen more clues or hints or references to this dropped maybe recently, although there actually have been some that people have pointed out from, like, some of the newer Horus Heresy and, like, Siege of Terror books. Not anything, like, concrete necessarily, but hints and pieces. But I would like to raise a couple of quotes from Aaron Dembski Bowden, who is a very popular 40K author and has written stuff in the Horus Heresy era, has written some fantastic books in the current 40K era. And these are not recent quotes. This is from five and six years ago. So this is not new. This is not a new discussion. This was in a discussion about thoughts on a particular 40K commenter who I'm not going to name because blah. But someone, this is from Aaron Dembski Bowden, someone linked me a mention of my name in a female custodies and Marines debate, so I wanted to post to clear that up. This is where this conversation breaks down. I don't want to address anything except what I've publicly said, so bear with me. People assume too much about people's reasoning out there in the evil tides of the web. And here's the part about custodies. There is no lore saying custodians are X, Y, or Z, because until very recently, there was no custodian lore at all. That's why I'd be fine with female custodians, and the models would look badass. Anyone saying it breaks the lore is lying and or wrong, because we were actually in the meetings and sending the emails discussing the invention of said lore, and there was literally nothing in the old lore that weighed comprehensively or at all either way. I can think of reasons it would make sense, I can think of reasons it wouldn't, but it's a very minor point. Moving on. Also, in a discussion 5 years ago with someone saying, would female custodians be possible? Some of us have had this discussion behind the scenes lore-wise. There was no reason why it wouldn't be possible. It all came down to a former IP overlord saying no because the minis are finished and they're all male. In a conversation 5 years ago regarding International Women's Day, how are we feeling about representation of Warhammer of women in Warhammer 40K today? He said, what I was saying was at the time of working on the lore, there's no reason they couldn't be male or female. And as far as things still stand, there's still no lore reason why they can't be. But there is a non-lore reason, which was the previous IP overlord saying there are no female custodians models. They're all males, so don't write any female ones. There was also a studio mandate a couple of years after that saying don't do female custodians. Again, that seemed to tie into with the release of an all-male mini line. Two very rare moments of direction from on high. I don't want to argue about what that may or may not mean, since although I'm ambivalent to the notion of female space marines, really they'd make such a little difference at the end result. I couldn't care less what gender they start out as. Several creators actively thought female custodians would have been cool, and there was no lore against it. Hell, we were in the position to make lore for it. But long story, no, the answer seems to be there aren't any, though the reasons aren't in universe yet. So, as of 2019, it's on record saying the only reason that we didn't have female custodes in lore was because somebody in business management and managing the IP said, well, we didn't make any models for it, so we can't. Like, we don't have models of female custodes, so we better not write it in the lore. And that's one thing to remember. The model Games Workshop is primarily a model company. They have been for years and years. And the lore and the game is shaped based on that model line. And it is only now recently that we are starting to see models and like models not drive the lore quite as much. And so somewhere in the process of this codex being made and this fiction being written in this book, someone at the IP level, and he does specify as of 5 years ago, it was a former head of IP, the previous head of IP, made that decision of no. Somewhere in there, that has changed. And I think one of the things that has changed it is another gold-suited army, the Stormcast Eternals. Because when Stormcast Eternals dropped in the first edition of Age of Sigmar, they were all male. Every single one of them had like the Blood Angel style, like muscular nipple armor type armor.
The pecs of Sigmar.
But with the right. But with second edition and the unlocking of the Sactor Sanct Chamber, may they rest in peace. And the addition of Nev Black Talon as a character, we started to see female Sacrosanct Eternals, or not female Stormcast Eternals. And I think the fact that those have been pretty well accepted as, hey, we can have giant golden super soldiers who are male or female, and nobody really seems very bothered by it, and some people think it's actually kind of cool and are more likely to buy those models, probably helps drive that decision. Now, have they stuck very firmly to there are no male Space Marines? So far, yes. Although I do think it's kind of interesting because one of the things in the Codex drives home the difference in that Custodes are all genetically modified from like infancy. Like nobody brings in like a 12 or 13 year old boy like the Space Marines do and then load them up with organs like they like in that one episode of Invader Zim where more organs equals more human. Because that's basically what they're doing.
Was not expecting an Invader Zim reference today. Thank you.
You're welcome. But instead, like every single Custodian is methodically gene crafted using techniques that are very secretive, but they are, it's clear that this is not just the process of inserting gene seed organs. Every single one of them is gene sculpted from a very, very, very young age. And so if there was any issues with, you know, like, there's nothing about, well, it'll only work for people with a Y chromosome. No, apparently not, because the technique is better. And I've actually seen some fan commentary suggesting that it's the difference between Space Marines are basically mass produced. Like, they have to be just to keep the numbers up. And so it's kind of a crude and dirty process. And I actually finished reading Belisarius Call, The Great Work. It's a it's a 40K novel, and it goes into the history of Belisarius Call, and he actually talks with some of the people who worked on the Astartes project, because it wasn't all humans, or it wasn't all the Emperor. There were plenty of human scientists that were involved, and like talking to the guy who created the idea of the black carapace and how like it has to be implanted, and it's basically a sculptable cancer and something like it's like it's an ugly process of making a Space Marine, and Call's refined it, but he hasn't like completely reworked it yet. So it's a crude, ugly process compared to what is done with the Custodes, which is all the Custodes are all bespoke, effectively. Every single one of them is carefully handcrafted. You know, there's nothing in the lore. There's now literally nothing in the lore that says that you can't have a female infant handed over to the Custodes gene crafters and sculpted into a Custodian. There's nothing there. And in fact, all the language in the history of the Custodes, such as it is, it's only like 4 or 5 pages now in the Codex, is all very gender neutral. Like it very, like none of it uses like gendered pronouns at all. So that's the lore now. And apparently, it always could have been the lore. The only reason was there weren't models to support it. Will there be new Custodes models? I don't think they're going to re-release new Custodes models anytime soon. But there are plenty of Stormcast Eternal heads
that are unhelmeted that if you want to have female custodies, you absolutely can. So it's all possible, but it's like saying like, well, the lore didn't support it. Could have been handled better. Sure. But there was a reason it wasn't. And it was basically somebody in management saying, don't do that. It wasn't the writers getting together and saying, no, this can never be. In fact, many of them were absolutely for it. So there you go. I mean, it's, and as far as the idea of this only being due to like pushed by tourists and we need to gatekeep the hobby, I've been actively involved with 40K for 17 years, and I know it's 17 years because my daughter's birthday is today, and I started playing while my wife was pregnant with her. So I've been involved with it 17 years, and I was actually got first involved with it a few years before that. I've been podcasting for a dozen years now on this. I have multiple armies. I have played in multiple events. I have brought home painting and gameplay trophies. I'm anything but a tourist, and I think this is an awesome change. I think this, and it's one of those changes that it really doesn't have any massive impact on the game, but it's cool. So enjoy gatekeeping me out of the hobby that I've been in. And a lot of the people who, I will say this, a lot of the people who are throwing this around, when you confront them, they're like, oh no, I don't play. I don't have any, because some people have been like, okay, so let me see the models you've painted. Oh, I don't actually play or do anything with it. I'm just mad about this. It's like, why are you mad about it? You're not even involved. That's a tourist. So I think a lot, yeah. Are there people who are mad about it? Sure. Should they be? Not really. Especially considering it's a 2-page story in a book that has way bigger issues than a 2-page story.
Yeah. No, the book is fine. It's what we've asked for.
We'll be talking about that in a bit. But yeah, and I will say the people I have talked to on our Discord have been very fine with this. Like, I haven't seen any negative reactions there. And most people I've talked to locally have no problems with it. And I'd say everybody I've talked to about it locally has no problems with it. Everybody seems cool. Or they're not saying.
The problem is, the internet, like, emboldens people to be more confrontational and dig in, like, more to your, like, specific opinions or personality. There was a whole Arbiter Ian video that came out, I think, right before the last episode about using the Primaris Space Marines controversy, heavy finger quotes, to kind of use it as a lens and discuss this. And there's a whole number of reasons for it. I think most people online, I'm not going to say they're being performative, but I think a lot of people have harder opinions online than they actually do when they talk to people in person. And that's always, for me, that's always been the big thing that I love about this hobby, is this is a hobby that you primarily do with other people in a room, like in physical space. You can talk about it, you can read the lore and all that stuff, but like at the end of the day, the advantage of the hobby is you go in a room, you talk to a person, you play a game, you interact directly. And every case that I've ever had in an actual game in person, my opponent's been fine. I don't know anything about their political ideology or any of that stuff, but they've always been fun to play against because we're here to have fun. So even when you're, running non-lore accurate armies, or you just want to ignore some of the lore changes, that's fine. Your army's your own. Build it how you want. Like I said, if you wanted to build a female custodes army 3 weeks ago, you absolutely could have. And if you don't want to include female custodians in your army going forward, you don't have to. So, yeah, I think a lot of this is just people need to remember that this is a unifying hobby. This is a hobby that a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on, and we just need to make sure that we're treating everybody in the hobby with respect. So,
agreed. Absolutely agreed. So, yeah, well, that's, I think, where we kind of land on the whole thing, that it really is a tempest in a teapot. It is a change that I think we're all absolutely for. And In the end, it really doesn't affect anything on the tabletop.
And if you have really strong opinions about any of this, please send complaints to richard@preferredenemies.com.
No.
Don't do that to Richard. He's not here to defend himself.
I know. That's why it's funny.
I mean, if you have complaints about orcs, send them to him. But
okay, fair enough. We'll go with that.
Yeah, if you have complaints about orcs, yeah. I don't think anybody had complaints about orcs. I've heard nothing but positivity about orcs.
That orcs codex is awesome.
Yeah.
If only they all could be.
Yeah, if only they all could be. But we'll be talking about that in part two. So we're going to take a quick break for sponsor identification. But if you want to talk with us or other cool people who we've been encountering on our Discord, we invite you to join the Preferred Enemies Patreon at patreon.com/preferredenemies. It is an online tip jar. We don't lock any of our episodes behind a paywall. It is just there if you want to help support the show. And right now, your support helps us with our hosting services, our recording services, helping replace mics when things break down, and have kept us able to produce the show. In fact, pretty much you guys are paying for the show. So we really do appreciate every bit of support we get. And if you join, you get access to the Preferred Frenemies Discord. And we just enjoy meeting our, you know, we've always enjoyed meeting people in person, and now we get to meet people online as well. And it's very cool. We love talking with y'all, and we would invite you to talk with us. So again, that is at Preferred Enemies, or that is at patreon.com/preferredenemies. And even if it's just a dollar a month, enough people put in a dollar, it adds up and it really does help out. And we would love to see you there. All right. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the rules in Codex Adeptus Custodes. See you in a bit.
Miniatures. We build them, we paint them, we love them.
That's why we also want to get them to the battle and back again safely.
And that's where Kara Multicase comes in. They offer a complete model storage and transport system.
They offer a wide selection of core trays for standard size miniatures, as well as custom cut trays for specific models.
KR's trays are made of a soft foam, available in a variety of colors that won't scratch or snag your models.
And to protect the foam, the trays are carried in easily stackable, swappable cardboard cases.
They also offer a full range of Kaiser bags, backpacks, and aluminum cases for transporting your KR cases.
You can even choose from pre-built tray selections to suit your army, or use the autofill app to find just the right trays for your particular force.
Whatever your game, 40K, X-Wing, Worm Hordes, or Historicals, KR Multicase has the cases to fit your needs.
You can find out more at krmulticase.com.
KR Multicase. Soft foam for your figures, hard cases for the soft foam.
Are you tired of playing on a boring battlefield? Do you want to step up the quality of your gaming table and make your battle look real?
Then you need to check out the battle mats from GameMat. Their professionally designed rubber-based mats are just what your gaming table needs.
Available in a variety of styles, with everything from rolling grasslands to urban war zones, winter wastelands to alien deserts, there's a game mat to fit any kind of terrain.
Their mats are padded, anti-slip, waterproof, and when you're done rolling dice and battling on your mat, just roll it up and stick it in the convenient carrying bag for easy transport and storage.
And if you don't have a gaming table, they've got you covered with their folding G-board portable gaming area and their line of pre-painted resin terrain.
If you're ready to upgrade your gaming table, head over to www.gamemat.eu and find the gaming mat that's right for you.
Game Mat, giving your armies the battlefield they deserve. And we're back, and that means it's time to dig into our main topic, which is our review of the rules in Codex Adeptus Custodes. Now, if you aren't aware, the Adeptus Custodes are the guardians of the Golden Throne. They are the guardians of the Emperor, the Emperor's personal bodyguard, the 10,000. As we mentioned in the first half, every one of them individually handcrafted genetically to basically be the best possible soldiers and advisors that the Emperor could have. And they continue to serve him even as he is a corpse ensconced on the Golden Throne. And they do specify that, you know, they are not just warriors, but they are also trained in all sorts of knowledge and subjects. They basically have to be great at everything. And also, they are told, even the newer ones that are crafted, because the custodians are still being crafted to this day, they are told basically, this is what the Empire was supposed to be. this is what it is. This is how bad it's gotten, to the point that it's so bad that some potential custodies have to be put down because it's that bad. The Emperor, anybody who tells you, oh man, the Imperium of Man would be a cool place, no. Even the even prospective custodies can't handle it. So, but they are individual, like, godlike warriors. It's strongly implied that they are effectively immortal if not killed in battle. Although after a certain point, some of them are either so, like, not injured enough to be put in a dreadnought, but eventually reach a point where they eventually kind of get too tired to be active warriors on the front line. So they will even become like Imperial agents who are there to try to determine what possible threats there are against the Imperium. Like, this is not just the Emperor's bodyguard, but the Imperium's bodyguard. And in their service, they are joined by a group known as the Sisters of Silence, or the Silent Sisterhood, the Null Maidens, the militant arm of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica, and they are all psychic blanks. They cannot be affected by psychic powers, and they are actively uncomfortable to hang around. They have taken a vow of silence. They often serve on the black ships that bring psychers to be consumed to keep the Emperor alive. And up until the return of Rabuta Gilliman, they had all been basically working in the background. And when he came back, he's like, no, the threats here, especially with like the Great Rift and such, are of such magnitude that, no, we need the custodies and the Sisters of Silence on the front lines. We need them to handle these threats in a more proactive manner. And so when these were first reintroduced to 40K, there was even the Talons of the Emperor box set that had both custodies and Sisters of Silence included in it. And
it
so
was really cool. Flew off the shelves.
Yes. And so these two forces have worked hand in hand for millennia, for over 10,000 years and onward, to defend the empire from threats internal and external.
Oh, I thought you were going to say from devastation and protect our worlds.
No, I'm not. I am not going to Team Rocket this. No, I am not. Also, because Team Rocket never succeeds, and so far, the custodians have failed once. And they do specifically talk about that when Horus and the Emperor fought and the Emperor was mortally wounded, that was their one failure, and they still carry that to this day. So the in all their time, the custodians have failed once at their sworn duty, and they are fond of that, but they keep at it.
To be fair, that is a pretty big L.
It is that is the L of all L's. In the 40K universe, I would say. So, you know, Poe Buddy's nerfed. But how do you create an army of demigods on the table? Because that's pretty much what the custodes are. How do you render that army without them just being a completely unbeatable mass? And that has been
a
challenge.
Make their points really high.
Yes. That is one thing you can do. They are an extremely low model count army usually. And that has actually kind of worked in their favor to get a lot of people playing them, because it's a very easy army to build. It's a very easy army to paint because it's a lot of gold. Like, if you can do gold and a wash, you're like 80% of the way there on a custodian's army.
By the way, GW has a gold primer.
Yes.
That is apparently made of solid gold.
Judging from the cost, yes.
Yeah, it's great, but it's $30 a can.
So it's been an army that I would say since they were reintroduced to the 40K universe in 8th edition, it's always been a tricky army to balance. And I know there was a stretch in 9th edition where they were super powerful. And then there's a stretch in 10th edition, which they have been really strong, very powerful. They are near the top, like they were near the top of the power curve, and then they got knocked down near the bottom of the power curve, and then the balanced data slate came out, and they were kind of moved back up. And as of right now, I think they're still in the sweet spot, but like at the higher end of the sweet spot.
oh, they're going to drop. So,
I mean, this is not new discussion. A lot of people have been talking about this over the last 2 weeks since the first previews and reviews of the Codex came out. And I mean, the Goonhammer basically said, thank you to GW for sending us this Codex. We would like them to take it back. It Ouch. Was... Yeah, they were not kind in their review. So we'll see how we end up faring with this one. So it is this is a small unit count army, not quite as small as
Knights
Votan or Knights, but it does, you know, but this does
smaller
have
than Votan.
Well, let's see. Votan have what, a dozen?
Oh, you're units. Just talking about units in the Codex itself. Got it.
Okay. Unit in the
I
Codex.
Thought you were talking
yeah.
about, yeah.
Model count, they're small. Model count, they're small. Like, a Custode's army is going to be smaller than most other armies. But, like, unit-wise, they actually have a passable number of options. And that's even before you bring in, like, Forge World, Horus Air, Sierra stuff, which yeah,
Forge
is still
World
available.
Flushes them out so much.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'll
and
see what happens.
Forge World doesn't change.
Forge World doesn't change, but the points for this are not out. Technically, the Codex is not in hands yet. Time will tell if, due to the current split between Horus Heresy stuff being allowed for, like, you know, being, like, segregated to Horus Heresy only, like it is for Space Marines and Chaos Space Marines, whether any of that stuff gets legended or not.
Two things I'll say about that thought is, one... I saw that stuff on the sidebars where they did talk about they have access to these old texts, and the stuff they described was exactly the old Forge World stuff. Right. But we've also seen other things on like the sides or even in the codexes themselves, which then are not in the rules.
Right. Like, yeah, like the Orc Codex. Juggernauts. Yeah. Or the Orc Codex where it's like, hey, here's a whole page spread on Captain Badruk. Not in the book. No longer, unit model has been retired, no longer in the book. So yeah, it remains to be seen. I do think there's a missed opportunity to do some of those models in plastic, especially with the Horus Heresy line being moved into plastic, but that could also be a double-edged sword, meaning, okay, it's in plastic and now it's in Legends. So we'll see what happens with that. So let's get into the rules for this army. So the army's rule, and I'm going to put that in finger quotes. The army's rule is the martial kata rule, which, you know, represents the fighting stances that the custodes are trained to take. Now, this is the same army rule they had in the index. However, there are a couple of changes to it. So basically, each time a unit from your army is selected to fight, they can select one of the stances in the martial kata, and they gain that ability. Now, in the index, this was a per army, like the whole army. Like at the beginning of the fight phase, you pick a stance, and everybody in the army takes that stance. Now it is a per unit. That is a good change. That gives you more flexibility. However, GW giveth and GW taketh away. They also took away one of the three stances. So originally there was a stance called, and I just have my notes up. There was originally a stance called Captaris, and it gave the unit -1 to be hit in melee. That is gone, and there's nothing to replace it. There were three stances. There are now two. The two stances are you gain sustained hits one. That's Dakatari. Or Dakatari, and there's Rendax, which is your weapons gain lethal hits.
I mean, so, what I'll say on this, Rob, is Custodes were so good because you couldn't get rid of them. I mean, they mm-hmm. don't—they never had great firepower. They were decent in melee, but you couldn't get rid of them. So when I play Custodes, and I'm sure most others did, you always pick that first one, -1 to be hit, because that's more survivability.
Right. And that leads to, and we will see more of this down through the changes to this book, but I think that's also led to one of the complaints about playing against Custodes, is they are a very uninteractive army to play with,
or play against, mm-hmm. because as of index custodies, it's like, yeah, it's basically an army that you throw yourself at and hope you can break something, because they're not going to be easy to shift. And that can be unfun to play, especially in a game that is entirely about scoring objectives, and killing doesn't really get you much. And against custodies, killing doesn't get you much anyway, because they are very difficult to kill. Or they were more difficult to kill. They will be easier to kill. But the flip side of that is they're also a low model count army, so every loss you feel hurts, and thus any loss of survivability is going to make your army that much more fragile. It's a balancing act, and as we will get into, we'll see how well they may have carried this off. But this is definitely, losing that one stance. But if everyone is always taking that stance all the time, that's also not good design.
Right.
So,
and with the two that remain, if something's too big, well, you go lethal hits. If something's like a horde, you take sustained hits. So, I mean, mm-hmm. now they really have, you've removed the auto select and just taken the two that you know which one you're going to pick. It just gives them more versatility in what they want to do.
Right. And having that being per unit allows you to tailor that to this unit is fighting a vehicle, lethal hits. This unit is fighting a horde, sustained hits. And you don't have to be like, well, I'm going to take the one that's good for this unit and the other unit, well, I guess they're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would also like to point out, as I said, this is an army rule, finger quotes, because a good chunk of the army does not have this rule. And
I will disagree that a good chunk of the army doesn't have the rule.
At least one detachment will not really take advantage of this rule in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, I will agree with that statement. I mean, this just feels like Mechanicus again, where not all of your units had that keyword.
Yeah. Also, bad design. I would like to reference a video that just recently came out from the Poor Hammer podcast about, like, the problem with GW Codex design. And one of the things they point out is if your army rule doesn't actually affect your entire army, it's not an army rule.
I mean, by the rule, that's right.
Yeah, well, and basically saying, like, outside of, like, maybe one or two unique cases, like, the idea of Space Marine Servitors, which I don't even know if they still take Servitors. I'd have to look at the index again. But, like, Space Marine Servitors not getting, like, combat tactics or something like that. That makes sense.
I'll toss this one out to you just to give people more head scratchers. The Venerable Land Raider knows Marshal Kataz, too. So this Land Raider's been training for so hard to either get lethal.
I want to see a Land Raider take a stance. What? It's kind of like pop a wheelie or something. I don't know.
So I mean, this kind of goes with your point of if you're doing it narratively, well, make it narrative, not.
Yeah, but.
I mean, or I can do this for Kevin. The Land Raider's going to show up and it's going to bring doom into you all.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
And so that is our army rule. And so now we get into our detachments. Now, traditionally, in other codexes we have reviewed so far for this edition, the first detachment listed is generally the index detachment, maybe renamed, maybe slightly reworked, but usually like that's the all-comers general use detachment. And then the more specific cases will fall after that. That is not the case here, because while the detachment from the index is here, sort of, that is not the detachment that we get listed
for. Rob, first. Can I go backwards for a minute?
Sure.
They used to have another army rule besides Marshal Kataz called Aegis of the Emperor.
Once upon a time, yes. They haven't had that in this edition. But
yeah,
yes. Well,
they still had the field against, yeah.
That was the shield host. That was a detachment rule. That wasn't an army rule.
Oh, wait, you're right. I'm looking at my notes. It is the detachment. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. So we'll get into that when we get into the... when we get to the shield host detachment, but
well,
in the
I think
codex
we should
right
mention
now,
it now, but we have well, talents.
We'll get there. It's the second detachment. It's not the first detachment. The first detachment is now Talons of the Emperor, and that is your combined arms, Custodes and Sisters of Silence, which are represented by the Anathema Psychana keyword. That is them working together. And to represent this, they have the Revered Companions Detachment Rule, where your Sisters of Silence, your Anathema Psychana units, gain a 6-inch aura of Custodes in this aura get a 5-up Feel No Pain against psychic attacks and mortal wounds. Custodes units, all other Adeptus Custodes units get, while an Anathema Psychana unit is within 6 inches of this unit, they get +1 to hit. So your Custodes make your Sisters hit better. Your Sisters protect your Custodes from psychic and mortal wounds. Does not protect against devastating wounds. I imagine that will probably be eroded shortly thereafter, and this is one of the problems with a physical release that is earlier in the release cycle than the balanced data slates, because technically, as of right now, they lose their Feel No Pain against devastating wounds also.
Right. So, yeah, going into a few things on this. One, I love that this makes the Sisters of Silence hit on 2-ups, because they're all 3-ups now. And the Custodes, this is why I'm jumping ahead, lost their ability that like they currently had of the 4-up for the shield host. And so this is the only way they get that back, but then they only get it at a 5-up. So it is kind of a downgrade, especially since you have to have a Sisters of Silence unit within 6 inches of your Custodes unit to even get that.
Right. And the Sisters are a much squishier unit than the Custodes. So I expect a lot of target priority against them early on in the game.
You can block one.
You can block one, but not forever. All the enhancements here are for Adeptus Custodes models, and that makes sense because there's far more character options than the Sisters of Silence, and we'll be talking about that when we get to another detachment later.
I will toss this out. Technically, all your Sisters of Silence are Custodes models, so even HQs can take these.
Okay, fair. That is true. The Knight Centura has the Adeptus Custodes faction keyword. So yes.
Correct.
So, correct. So so everybody can take these.
Yes.
You are correct.
And some of them are really good on the Sisters more than the Custodes.
Right. And that is why they do specify in the detachment rule, it says all other Adeptus Custodes units, not correct. Just Adeptus Custodes units. So you've got the Radiant Mantle. Every time an attack targets the bearer's unit, if the attacking model is within 12 inches, subtract 1 from the hit roll. That's good defensive play. Gift of Terran Artifice. Each time the bearer makes a melee attack, add 1 to the wound roll. Also very solid. And good on Sisters because they do have a lower strength. Their melee attacks are generally strength 3 or strength 5.
With
fives for Vigilators, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the normal Sisters in melee, no.
Yeah. Champion of the Imperium, the range of either of those auras, depending on which kind of character they have, is increased to 9 inches.
I mean, on the Sister, because I think their aura is a little more important to me.
Yeah, taking a Knight Centura would be beneficial there, yeah. And then the Aegis Projector, once per turn, the first time a saving throw has failed for the bear's unit, change the damage characteristic of that attack to 0.
And that's just amazing.
yes and no. I don't like it that much because it's good if somebody's throwing a big gun at you, but if they're smart, they're going to throw a bunch of small fire at you and wait for you to roll a 1. And then throw the big gun at you.
Mm.
So it's not terrible, but I think it's of less utility than you might think if somebody's playing their army, right?
Nah, I can agree with that.
Then you have their stratagems. I will note that this one has the most battle tactics, has 4 separate battle tactics, which is going to be important later.
But also, all of these encourage you to have units that are like at least one Anathema Psychana unit and only one Anathema Psychana unit within 6 inches. Because it's either you can, because all of them are like you can target up to two Custodes units, but to target two, one of them has to be a Sisters of Silence unit. Hunt is one, which is not a battle tactic. You basically can select up to two units. So again, assuming one is the Sisters. And until the end of the turn, a unit can advance, can shoot or declare a charge in a turn in which they fell back.
I love
always
that
cool.
One.
But yeah, yeah, very useful. Talons interlocked. This one is a battle tactic. In your shooting phase, select up to two infantry units and one eligible target. And every time they attack that target with a ranged attack, strength and AP of the attack goes up by one. Not bad.
That's useful.
Yep. Empiric Severance. This is when, you know, in your shooting, your opponent's shooting or fight phase, just after an enemy unit has selected its targets, you select a Custodes unit from your army and a Anathema Psychana unit within 6 inches of that Custodes unit. And it doesn't specify that it's a non-Psychana unit, so you can have one Sister's unit target another Sister's unit with this. The unit that is being targeted by the Sister's unit within 6 inches gains gains Feel No Pain 4 up against psychic attacks and mortal wounds. So that is the closest you will get to the old Aegis ability.
And you
is
won't,
by using the strat.
You won't use it on a Sisters to target Sisters because their ability is the same or better.
Right, right. Yeah, you really won't. You could, you just probably won't.
You'd just be wasting a CP.
Yeah. Let's see. Then you've got, and that is a battle tactic, so again, this will be important later. Then you've got the Emperor's Executioners, again, restricted to, you can only select two if one of them is Anathema Psychana. At the start of the fight phase, each time a model in your units targets an enemy unit that is below starting strength, add one to the wound roll. Not bad. You've got plenty of opportunities to soften somebody up before you get into melee with them, so that is very good. Taloned Pincer, again, same restriction. You're in your opponent's movement phase, just after an enemy unit ends a normal advance or fallback move, target up to two Custodes units within 9 inches of the enemy unit. Your units can make a normal move of up to 6 inches, and there's, you can't pick units that are in engagement range of enemy units. So again, if somebody like moves, you've got a chance to push up on them, or if they try to fall back, you can push up on them. Yeah, or retreat if you don't want to be that close to them.
Since you lost a lot of fights first.
Right. I think you lose almost all your fights first in this.
Yep. Almost all.
Shield of Honor, your opponent's shooting phase just after an enemy unit has selected its targets. Select an Anathema Psychana infantry unit from your army that was selected as the target of one or more of the unit's attacks, and one other Adeptus Custodes infantry unit that is not an Anathema Psychana, and they have to target the Custodes unit instead of the Anathema Psychana unit. So that's where your Custodians can step up and protect a Sister's unit. And I have a feeling that's going to be a common use.
And, well, you could use it only once because it's an epic deed, and I'm sad about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this leads to an interesting style of play. It is going to require Custodes players, if they just lean into this, to probably paint up all those Sisters of Silence that they've just been ignoring. Because so many people, because let's be fair, most Custodes players have not been fielding Sisters of Silence.
Oh, I know, and I agree. I was just kind of laughing because this is the detachment I've been asking for. I kind of wish it was 9 inches instead of 6 inches away, but that's just me. But yeah, I've already got my, well, I don't have probably enough Sisters of Silence, but this is the one where you have to run them together. I was in the past using them. The Sisters were more just holding objectives. Well, until like Custodes got the ability to make them sticky, which this detachment does not have. But the fact to make both units better, you have to be together. I don't want to put two units on an objective. That almost seems like overkill. So I'm not sure how to effectively play this unless you have some that stay together and some that break apart to like hold objectives or whatnot, because like you said, the Sisters of Silence are really squishy. So custodes kind of help protect them, or cover might. But the custodes are just that much sturdier, so they could hold it. But then the sisters without them there, like, I'm hitting on threes and I'm not that strong. So it's going to be interesting, and I need to play around with different ideas and tactics on how to make this work. Because the other problem I have with this one is custodes are just way too expensive. Because I was trying to, like, point out, like, even at 1,000 points, which is what our little group in Dallas has been doing, Sisters of Silence are decently cheap, but if you put an HQ, that doubles their cost, because the HQs are kind of expensive. And then the custode, because that's about 150. A custode's unit is over 150 already, so the most I could have would be like 3 pairs of custodes and sisters on the board. And that does not lead towards good board control.
No, it does not. Yeah, this one, and as I pointed out, like, this also has very clear, like, weak points that can be targeted, namely the sisters, that, like, you pick them off first because they're the easier kills, and then you go after the custodians,
and
who now no longer have their feel no pains.
Right, and the other thing I've noticed, though, is there seems to be less, because of Devastating Wounds change, I don't run into as much mortal wounds or psychic attacks. I mean, I think the best we have is against Tyranids, but Necrons don't really do any. Eldar can, but I'm more dealing with Wraith and Devastating Wounds from D-Cannons. So it's something that's out there, but it feels like it's so minor a thing right now that it's just like, oh, if you run into a unit or an army that has psychic attacks, cool. Or they do mortal wounds, cool, but most of the time that extra rule just will not come into play.
Right. Outside of things like tank shock, or there's a couple of units that can do like mortal wounds when they
charge,
move over something, or when they charge. Yeah, there's a few, but yeah, unless this is eroded to also apply to devastating wounds, it's not nearly as useful as it could be. I would not be surprised if we see the Null Aegis Aura and the Empiric Severance Strat updated once this book is out. Get some like day one errata to update them to apply to devastating wounds. I think this is also one of the arguments that I have seen made, and I do not disagree with, that we need to get away from physical codexes and get to digital codexes, because a digital codex could be released, even if it was just in PDF form, that was then like immediately updated to be like, oh yeah, no, this should apply against devastating wounds, or find a way to fix devastating wounds, because it breaks so many things that would count against it otherwise. So, but unfortunately, Eldari had to ruin that for everyone. So, yeah. So that's the Talons of the Emperor. I think it is an interesting concept for a detachment, but I agree with you. I think it's going to be hard to build, and it's going to have some definite weak points built into it right away that can be exploited, but it's a cool idea. And I agree with you. This is something they needed to have. They needed to have this detachment in this book. Now we go to the Shield Host. This has the same name as the detachment from the index. It does not really share a whole lot else other than a few stratagems, I think. As we were discussing, the Shield Host used to have the 4-up feel no pain against mortal wounds, and then later against devastating wounds once that was eroded in. And I would have expected that to be eroded in. I do like the addition of psychic attacks being counted in the Null Aegis and Talons of the Emperor, but that is not what the Shield Host has now. The Shield Host instead has martial mastery. Once per round at the start of the battle round, or once per battle at the start of the battle round, you can use martial mastery. If you do, until the start of the next battle round, each time a custodian's model from your army with the martial kata ability makes a melee attack, it crits on 5s instead of 6s. That's very good. If it weren't once per battle at the start of the battle round.
I mean, if this was just their built-in one without the once per battle, I would be all for Shield Host.
Yeah. And then also improves the AP of any melee weapons equipped by Adeptus Custodes models with Marshal Kata by one. This would be fantastic if basically we said, okay, we're not going to make them so defensive. We're going to make them killier. Yes, there's fewer of them, but they're going to have to get up in people's faces and fight them to really get the advantage of the Shield Host. Yeah, that would be great. But the once per battle just wrecks this. It just makes it such a weak ability because, four out of five rounds, you're not going to have it.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it had the potential to be good, but it's badly handled. Our enhancements. Two of these are Shield Captain only. Two of them can be on Shield Captain or Blade Champions. And they specify that because they don't want to say Adeptus Custodes, because, again, Sisters could take them then. So correct. They do have to be a bit more specific.
Oh, man. Can you imagine a sister with more wounds? Yeah. Oh.
Yes. And no ability to use the detachment rule because none of the sisters have Marshal Kata.
But the Land Raider does.
The Land Raider does. Yeah. So bad army rule because, again, a good chunk of the army does not have this rule. Cannot take advantage of this. This is meant to be the All Custodes detachment. I get it, but... Anyway, so from the Hall of Armories, Shield Captain model only, add one to the strength and damage characteristic of the bear's melee weapons.
It's decent.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Castellan's Mark, Shield Captain model only. After both players have deployed their armies and determined who has the first turn, you can select up to two non-Anathema Psychana Custodes units from your army and redeploy those units. When doing so, any of the units can be placed into strategic reserves, regardless of how many are already in strategic reserves. I mean, this is not a bad idea, but almost every other army that has this kind of enhancement, it usually affects up to three units. So now, granted, fewer
three
units
be the
on
whole
the
army
table because three could be the whole army. Yeah, so that's fair. That's fair, but like, it's not a bad idea. Like, I don't dislike it. It's just like, hey, it could be a little bit cooler, but it's fine.
Well, and the fact that you can put them in strategic reserves and then deep strike them in later as opposed to walking on, I do really like, and or just reposition someone who's already on the board late. I like this one. If it was three, it'd be really nice, but that would be almost like redeploying your whole army, it feels like.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Auric Mantle, Shield Captain or Blade Champion model, add two to their wounds. More survivability, any way you can get it. I think Auric Mantle is going to have to be a must-take in this one just to keep people alive. And then the Panoptispecs, Shield Captain or Blade Champion model only. While the bear is leading unit, ranged weapons equipped by models in that unit have ignores cover. It's fine.
Yeah, I go back and forth on ignores cover because sometimes I'm like, it's covered, not many. But then you play against a Tyranid that has like that shadowy cloud that gives everyone cover. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to ignore that. And it does make a difference, but only when it comes up.
Right. Whereas I would say from the Hall of Armories and Auric Mantle are must takes. They're always good. More strength and damage, more wounds, yes. And then Castellan's Mark is a pretty nice to have, and you will probably have at least two, probably three Shield Captains, maybe. Although you'll definitely have more in another detachment, but they won't have access to these enhancements, no, will they? And then we get into the strats. A couple of these are the same. Most of them have changed. Several of them are gone, such as the Slayer of Nightmares that gave you plus one to wound versus monsters or vehicles, something your army is weak against because you don't have a lot of anti-vehicle stuff. Gone. Unwavering Sentinels, which gave you fights first, one of probably the most infamous stratagems in the original index.
I love that one.
Is gone. Arcane Genetic Alchemy. This used to be reduce all incoming damage by one, and it is in fact our first stratagem here. It is also the only battle tactic in this detachment, and it gives you 4 up feel no pain against mortal wounds, so you can regain your Aegis ability on one, maybe two people, depending on what characters you're using.
Just have also, one shield captain use it, then have the all the others use their one for zero CP to copy a battle tactic that's been used.
Right. Like I said, it is usable, but you're going to be spending CP at some point on this. Also, this is one of five stratagems here that do specify a custodes, but not Anathema Psychana. So this will only affect your custodian guard, or not specifically custodian guards, but it will affect only your custodian units. Avenge the Fallen. This one, I believe, actually survived. it is in the fight phase. When one of your custodies units is below its starting strength, they add one to their attacks. If the unit is below half strength, add two to their attacks, which will be interesting because most units in this army that we could take advantage of this are going to cap out at five, which means below half strength means when they're down to two models in the unit, or down to one model if you're talking bikes.
Yeah, they have a lot more attacks than one or two normally. So you're getting a little bit, but you're not making up for what you lost.
Right. No. Unwavering Sentinels. This used to be the fight's first strat. It is now basically subtract one from incoming hit rolls. Hey, we found the missing stance. It's here. It's been made a stratagem. I would say that is definitely weaker than fights first. Even if you lost the minus one to be hit stance, fights first would still be better here.
It is, but also if it used to be a kata, I'd love to see it be like a battle tactic.
Mm-hmm.
But
because. Multi-potentiality. This one's brand new. And it also will affect any custodies unit in the army. Unit can shoot and declare a charge in turn which it fell back. That's always a useful to have. And since you don't have the as much survivability as you had before, falling back out of combat is a thing you might actually have to do from time to time.
I mean, two stratagems I love seeing in a detachment is one, fall back and shoot charge. And the other one is make something sticky or make an objective sticky. Mm-hmm. Those are my two favorite things to see. Because I feel like they have the most utility to me.
Right. Let's see. We've got Vigilance Eternal. This one actually used to be called Sworn Guardians and is what gives you sticky objectives.
Yeah.
That is going to be very useful for this detachment. Like, it is a strategic ploy. I think it always was.
Yeah. But the biggest thing is custodes are so low unit count that being able to make objectives sticky and then move on is such a huge deal.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to be able to move off of objectives and move forward. And then finally, we have Archaeotech Munitions. This is another new one. In your shooting phase, select a custodies unit that's not Anathema Psychana. Select either lethal hits or sustained hits one. It basically gives you a kata for your guns.
Yeah, gun kata.
Yeah. Also, Equilibrium is a fantastic movie, and I recommend you watch it. This, like, the Shield Host is not what it was. Absolutely not. Not even close. It is the custodies-only detachment. It is not it's an okay detachment, but it is really hamstrung. Like, it could have survived the loss of survivability, the loss of the Feel No Pain. Like, I don't have a problem with moving the Feel No Pain necessarily over to the Talons of the Emperor. Like, I'm fine with that. I think that's kind of cool. But making Martial Mastery once per battle at the start of a battle round is so bad. It is so very bad.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll actually play the Shield Host one. I mean, I thought it was a decent one, but it drops down from decent to okay because of the Martial Mastery being once per turn. Because the rest of it's not bad. I mean, they've got all the hallmarks of, this is a standard cool detachment. But just your detachment rule is dragging it down.
Yeah, and the detachment rule is dragging it down. The strats have been there. I mean, there's a couple that have stuck around or are decent, but a lot of them have been very, like, a lot of it's been watered down too. Or like Avenge the Fallen. Yeah, it was unchanged and it really didn't apply much. So yeah, it's not fantastic. And having only one battle tactic also kind of hurts, although it is the better battle tactic for them. And it is good that they can interact with that. That is another rule that could be changed, and I think no one would complain, is if they removed that from the balanced state of slate, the limit on being able to use strats being limited to battle tactics, like being able to use them for free, would be nice. There's a lot of detachments that would in the game that would really benefit from that. And also, I can only assume these codexes were written with the idea that those weren't limited to only battle tactics. And that's right. That's also, again, digital codexes would help that somewhat. We get to our third detachment, the Null Maiden Vigil. And this is not a surprising that this exists. We have basically effectively a third of the army is Anathema Psychana, so it makes sense for the sisters to have their own detachment, much like the Kroot got their own detachment in the Tau Codex, out of the same number of detachments, because we are going to be talking about four. That's one Tau Codex's worth. But Rob, I am still bitter weeks later.
Okay, Rob, how many models did the Kroot have, though?
They now have like 8 units.
Okay.
Because there are 3 Shapers. There's the Krutox Rampagers, the Krutox Gunner, the Lone Spear, Kroot Hounds, Carnivores, and Farstalkers. There are 9.
Well, for the sisters, we have 2, which is a Rhino or Troops, because that one box of Troops builds any of your sisters' models, because they only have that one box. So there's not much variety.
Set. There's one other. There's one. Aleia is a special model.
That's okay. Well,
so
that's
there's three.
Three. There's I'll three. Grant you that one.
But I'm talking like, yeah, and all of those units that I just listed for the Kroot are. But I'm saying there's 9 distinct data sheets versus 6, I think, if you include the Rhino. No, 5, if you include the Rhino.
No, 6. Because you've got 2 HQs, 3, and the Rhino.
Yeah, 6 if you include the Rhinos. But it's fine. It's fine. Like, they should have a detachment. I totally agree with that. And there's nothing that says you can't run normal custodies in here. They just won't get any benefit from the detachment rule. Also fine. That's something we've seen in other codexes. Their detachment rule is an aura. That in the battle shock step of your opponent's command phase, if an enemy unit that is either a Psyker unit or below starting strength is within 12 inches of one or more Psychona models from your army, they must make a battle shock test. If they're below half strength, they must subtract 1 from the battle shock test this phase instead. For representing the idea that these are blanks. And in 40K lore, blanks make people feel very ill at ease and uncomfortable, and or are very, strong and are also strong in psychers. I think that's a cool way to model this. That makes sense.
I totally agree. I just kind of wish it was subtract 1 from psychers.
I don't disagree. If you select this detachment, prosecutors, which are your bolter sisters of silence, gain battle lines. You can have up to 6 units of them, which is good because you need as many units as you can get.
And I was going to say, which is also funny in my mind, because in the previous edition, they had battle line and they lost it for this codex. But this is how you get it back.
You have to take the sisters detachment. We've got their enhancements. There's the Raptor Blade. And again, all of these are Anathema Psychana model only. There is exactly one unit you can add any of these to, and that is the Knight Centura. That is the only character who can take... So you will never have all 4 of these in a game. So pick 3. So there's the Raptor Blade. Add 1 to the attack, strength, and damage characteristics of the bear's melee weapons. And while they're within engagement range of 1 or more enemy Psyker units that are battle-shocked, so they have to be Psykers and battle-shocked, add 2 to the attack, strength, and damage characteristic of the bear's melee weapons instead.
I mean, that's decent.
It's decent.
Psycho Hunter.
It's yeah, and that's, I think, one of the biggest things about this is this detachment is really going to suffer if you are not playing against an army that has psychers.
Agreed.
And this is what we would have called, like, this is a flavor detachment for sure.
Oh, totally, totally.
yeah. Enhanced Void Sheen Cloak. Each time an attack is allocated to the bear, select one from the damage characteristic. If the attack was made by a psyker, or subtract, sorry. Yeah, no, add one. Kill him faster. Get this game over with. No, each time an attack is allocated to the bear, subtract one from the damage characteristic of that attack. If the attack was made by a psyker or a battle shocked model, change the damage to one instead.
That's
terrible.
Decent.
A Huntress's Eye. In your command phase, select one enemy unit within 12 inches of the bear. That unit must take a battle shock test, which means it's only going to be good against unwounded units. But it is a way to pick out, like, hey, we just got up close to you. Because if they're below starting strength, they're already going to have to take a battle shock test if they're within 12. Command phase.
So, correct. Yeah, so that's the difference.
Yeah. So in your command phase, which means theoretically, if you can force it in the command phase, and it doesn't specify at the end of the command phase, you could theoretically drop someone to zero for the purposes of scoring an objective.
Correct.
So
or
that
just
one,
triggering off your other things for your turn.
Right. So that one, I think, is if you take this, I think that's a must take.
Yeah.
And then finally, Oblivion Knight. While the bear is leading a unit, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, add one to the hit roll. That's very good. Gets you hitting on twos. If the attack targeted an enemy psyker unit, add one to the wound roll as well. No issues with this one. That one is, and you're going to be, again, taking three Knight Centura, most likely. I would say Huntress's Eye, yes. Oblivion Knight, yes. Probably Raptor Blade, I think, over the Void Sheen Cloak.
Yeah, I like the Void Sheen because I like being defensive, but I could see either.
It's just that, like, it's not going to do anything against one damage attacks.
Right.
Because it can't reduce it to zero.
And you only have, like, four wounds.
Right. So anything that's going to be big enough to really matter, it's probably not going to make that much difference. And against psykers, the things that psykers have that are going to do the most damage, you're going to have defense against anyway. So
also true.
I feel like the Raptor Blade's probably just the more, you'll get more utility out of it against everything.
Right.
Your strats, are either tied to particular kinds of sisters units or are generally against psykers, which again makes sense. They do have a couple of battle tactics, which, depending on how many custodians you take, may make a difference, may not. But your stratagems are Desperation's Price. In any phase, just after an enemy psyker unit has either finished using a psychic ability that targets a unit or has finished making psychic attacks, you select an Anathema Psychana unit within 18 inches of the psyker, and they must make a leadership test. If the test is passed, they are battle shocked. If the test is failed, they are battle shocked and suffer three mortal wounds.
I do like that.
I like it. It's just that there's a number of armies that will do nothing. You will not be able to use it.
True, but truthfully, even in lore, they were dispatched to handle psykers. And
yeah,
that holds true here. If you're not dispatched to psykers, you're doomed. But psychers, yeah, like, they're going to be good.
Yeah, for narrative play, this is fantastic. For competitive play,
No.
And I think that's one reason why Goonhammer took such a low a take. You know, they had such a bad feeling about this codex in general, is that a lot of this stuff is not really going to serve you well competitively. And that, admittedly, is their main focus.
Right.
We've got Witch Hunters. During your shooting or fight phase, so anybody's fight phase, when you select a Psychana unit from your army hasn't been selected yet, select either lethal hits or sustained hits one. You basically get Kata.
Yeah!
But the models in your unit can only target Psyker units with their attacks. You literally can't use it against anything else.
Anti-Psyker Kata.
It is very, yeah, anti-Psyker Kata. Anathema Blade Mastery. This is the other battle tactic. For your Vigilators, these are your Sword Sisters. Until the end of the phase, the fight phase, when your models in your unit make a melee attack, you can reroll the hit roll. That is good. If the target of the attack is Battleshocked or a Psyker, you can reroll the wound roll. Also good. This one's actually not bad.
I like this, this one. This one's good.
I like seeing things that are good against everyone, better against Psykers, rather than only good against Psykers.
Agreed.
Psychaff Volley, your shooting phase, select Prosecutors, your Bolter Sisters, your Battle Line Sisters. Select an enemy unit hit by one or more of those attacks until the start of the next turn. That unit is considered prosecuted. While a unit is prosecuted, you're prosecuted, little man. Well, if a unit is prosecuted, each time a Psychana model makes an attack against that unit, improve the AP of the attack by one. And if it's a Psyker or Battleshock unit, then each time the model is in that unit makes an attack, they subtract one from the hit roll. Considering that this ties into Battleshocked, I also like this one. I also like it is not only gets better against Psykers. And I think if Witch Hunters got better against Psykers or Battleshocked, that would also be good. Again, it's like you've got all these Battleshock abilities. Lean into that even harder than you are right now. Purgation Sweep, this is for your Witch Seekers, your Flamer Sisters. Until the end of the phase, add one to the attacks made by attacks characteristic of torrent weapons equipped by models in your unit, which that's all they have. If you, yep. such a unit targets a Psyker or Battleshock unit, add two. Again, I like this one because it does lean into the Battleshock ability, which your army should be dishing out as much as possible. And then finally, Psychic Abominations. Your opponent's shooting phase, just after an enemy is targeted, one of your Psychana infantry units. Until the end of the phase, your unit has stealth, and Battleshocked and Psyker models can only select your unit as a target if they're within 12 inches. So basically gives the unit a limited version of Lone Operative as well. Again, I like this. Yeah, basically, for the most part, there's like one or two... Like, there's one. I think Witch Hunters is the one I like the least. Desperation's Price is the one that, like, okay, I make sense. You know, this one is only good against Psykers. I kind of get that one. I wish Witch Hunters worked against Battleshocked units. All the rest of them, I think the strats are fine. I think the enhancements are fine. I think the detachment rule is cool. Yeah. I just think this army lacks the unit choice to really get the most out of this.
I mean, this is a very solid detachment, but it's also a very weak detachment because of the models that it's supporting.
I have seen arguments that Sisters of Silence need, like, Sisters on Bikes, which would be cool, or that they need... something else, but it's like you have to figure out how also you don't want them to just turn into an off-brand version of Sisters of Battle. So
right,
and this is also a line where other than like one or two very odd Forge World units, they don't even have that much support in Forge World stuff to bring in. Other than
I mean, you got pistols,
yeah, but I mean they don't have. Transport. I mean, yes, you. Yeah, they got the weird transport, but other than bringing in custode stuff, which will not benefit from any of the rules here, they don't have anything. Like, they are not equipped to handle heavy targets. They don't have the strength. They don't have the weaponry.
They were always really intended to be a support kind of function, where they're supporting, in this case, the custodes. And the only reason they got their own detachment in the past was because they got kicked out of the custodes codex. And they're like, what do we do with these? And so that's kind of how that came to be. But now that they're back together, we got the talons. They're like, well, we should have something for the sisters. I'm glad they did. It's a really cool detachment. But with six units you can really choose from that can benefit, it's not very strong. It's very flavorful. But as we noted, if you put this on a table, in a competitive sense, or even in a casual sense, if you're not fighting against psychers, even a few psychers, you're going to have to try to get so close. Fast. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they are squishy. They are very squishy and they don't even have the extra six up save that Sisters of Battle have, who are equally squishy, but have a lot, are more all comers hand, you know, focused right. rather well, than just anti-psyker.
Sisters of Battle also fleshed out where you've got the jump ones. You've got all of the, like the Paragon War suits, the Penitent Engines. You've got a whole range. And mm-hmm. to be honest, I don't want, I mean, I would like to see maybe a couple extra units, but I don't want a whole range for the Sisters of Silence, because then that would kind of break them off from being support to, hey, yeah, we're our own line, but we're just kind of mashed into this book too.
The, you know, honestly, this is a good detachment to, because assuming the points in the, you know, we're going to completely ignore the points in the codex because they really don't matter. It's really going to come down to what the points are when they update points, like at the end of the month. But if these are cheap enough, like splashing in a couple of like venerable dreadnoughts wouldn't be bad. This is also an army that would love to have a free blade join it.
Oh,
like
yeah.
a knight free blade would
knight
be,
free blade would be really good.
Yeah, and in fact, I've seen some people like trying to build Custodes lists, and a lot of them are bringing in Canis Rex as an add-on to just up their killing power.
Well, this makes no sense. Well, I might. I was going to say, you could also bring in an Inquisitor, and she can lead one of the battle line units, but most of the named Inquisitors are also Psykers, which you can do rules-wise, but lore-wise, that would just seem really weird.
It would. So it's like, yeah, this is a detachment that if you could take multiple detachments would be fantastic, but you can't. You can only pick one. And so I think outside of people having, you know, interesting narrative armies, this one's not going to see a lot of use just because of how limited the choices are. And then finally, we have the Auric Champions. This is the character detachment. All characters, all the time. Everything here is focused on Adeptus Custodes characters. It does not specify non-Psychana, so you can use Knight Centuras and Alea in here if you want. That is totally fine.
And just to be clear, it doesn't limit you to characters. It's just characters are what gets the buffs.
Right, yeah. You'll want to take more than characters, although you can eat up plenty of points on Custodes characters if you want. You're going to be hard-pressed to hold objectives, but you can do it. So your detachment rule is Assemblage of Might. At the start of your command phase, select one unit from your opponent's army until the start of your next command phase. Each time an Adeptus Custodes character model from your army makes an attack that targets it, add one to the wound roll. So you'll get to pick five units over the course of the game and get plus one to wound against them for a turn.
I mean, this feels like Oath of Moment, but different. So, I mean, yeah, I'm fine with this.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Your enhancements, Blade Imperator. And again, all these are Adeptus Custodes model only, so any of the characters that can take them. Each time a bearer's unit ends a charge move, so again, this does imply you are not just taking characters, you are leading units. Each time the bearer's unit ends a charge move, select an enemy unit with engagement range of the bearer and roll 1d6. On a 4-up, they suffer d3 mortal wounds. Once per battle, after the bearer's unit ends a charge move, all enemy units within 6 inches of the bearer must take a battle shock test. Okay, not bad. It's a 50-50 chance of doing some mortal wounds every time you charge, so maybe 2-3 times a game. It's not the best.
I mean, the battle shock would be useful for the other detachment.
Yeah. Again, if you could take multiple detachments, this would be great.
Wait, you can in Crusade.
That's true. That's true. You could put this on somebody and then... Inspirational Exemplar. Bearer has a leadership characteristic of 5-up. Once per battle, at the start of any phase, you can select one friendly Adeptus Custodes unit that is battle shocked, and within 12 inches, the unit is no longer battle shocked.
Okay, I'm sorry. Dropping from 6 up to 5 up is not much of an advantage. It has to be a 3 or a 4. Yeah.
Right.
And I can fail 5 ups.
Yeah. They're already 6 up leadership. This isn't that big.
It needs to probably be a 4. Oh, dude, I can fail 5 ups easily. I fail so many leadership tests. It is scary how many leaderships I fail here. I have to take a ton because I'm playing against Tyranids, but I fail like at least half of them. Even like the Lions failing leadership tests for me. I'm like, I need like it to be a 2 up and then I'll be better. Oh.
All right. Next up, Veiled Blade. Add 2 to the attack's characteristic of the bear's melee weapons. Once per battle at the start of any command phase, triple the bear's objective control characteristic until the end of the turn. This is a must take. Absolutely. With this, you need those characters to have as much OC as they can. Because most of your characters have OC. In fact, I think all of them have OC2. Except for the sisters ones, they only have OC1. So, yeah, that's a must take. And then Martial Philosopher, the bear's unit is eligible to shoot or declare a charge in which they fell back. And once per battle, when an enemy unit ends a normal advance or fallback move within 9 inches, you can move up to 6 inches. We saw this one in the Talons of the Emperor as the Talon Pincer stratagem. It is now just an enhancement you can take. You get into your strats. Slayer of Champions. All of these are pretty much target Adeptus Custodes characters. One of them only targets Adeptus Custodes warlords. So Slayer Champions, when one of your characters from your unit has just destroyed the unit you selected at the start of your command phase as the target of Assemblage of Might. Then you select an enemy unit on the battlefield, and each time a Adeptus Custodes character from the model targets it, they gain 1 to the wound roll. So basically kind of moves your target from one unit to another. That's good. And in addition, if the destroyed unit was a character unit, gain a CP. So that basically makes this free because it's an epic deed. All of these are epic deeds. Every single one of them. That's so bad.
But this is your epic, like, detachment.
I know.
And they're doing deeds.
They are. This is the epic deed, and which means this is the character-centric one, which means all your characters have an ability that will barely matter outside of generic stratagems.
Yeah.
But as far as strats for this detachment, I like this one because it allows you to basically have a second Assemblage of Might target.
Right. It's not a second one. It just kind of moves it so you don't lose it when you're dead.
Yeah, you don't. You can overkill. Like, you don't have to worry about overkilling something and then wasting it. This is very good for this detachment. I like it. Superhuman Reserves. This is a 2 CP, and just after one of your warlords has used an ability on your datasheet or from an enhancement that says it can only be used once per battle, they can use it one additional time. You cannot use this stratagem more than once per battle, and it's an epic deed. That is actually good because so many of the enhancements, I think all of the enhancements have a once per battle ability. This one will be very handy to have.
All the enhancements do, plus all the characters, well, all the non-Sisters of Silence characters have a once per battle on them as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that is very good, again, for this detachment. Emperor's Auspice. Just after an enemy unit has selected its targets in the shooting or fighting phase, you select a character that was targeted. The character models in the unit have a 5 up, or have, sorry, the character models in the unit have a 4 up feel no pain. Okay.
Solid.
Good.
Because it's just flat. Solid. It's not against mortals and psychics. It's just flat.
Yeah. Yeah. No notes. Earning of a Name. In the fight phase, you select up to 2 character units from your army that have not been selected in this to fight this phase. Until the end of the phase, each time a character model in either of those units makes an attack that targets a monster or vehicle, you can reroll the hit and wound roll. Also very good. This army needs this kind of thing badly. So, very solid. Again, no notes. And the fact that it allows you to target two, and it doesn't force you to target a particular monster or vehicle. So you can have two guys on opposite sides of the board targeting, like, fighting monsters or vehicles. So this one is good against knights, against anything that's running a lot of monsters. Again, good, no notes. Vigil Unending. This, I think, came over from the the original... Shield host, sort of, yeah. Because basically, it used to be return a model with wounds, like, left.
Yeah,
after it was destroyed. Amazing. Now it is a fight on death for 2 CP, no roll. When a character's died or when a character's killed, they get to fight on death.
I mean, it could be good. 1 CP, I'd say it's good. 2 CP, it's like, but I guess you do have a lot of characters. I don't know. I'm not sold on this one at 2 CP.
Right. And then Shoulder the Mantle. And at the end of your movement phase, you select a custodian's character that is within 2 inches horizontally and 5 inches vertically, i.e. within coherency, of a friendly unit that it could lead. They join the unit. But they can't join a unit that is already joined by somebody else. Which means you are using this if you either took units that didn't have leaders, or if a leader was killed by precision attacks. And with the name Shoulder the Mantle, it seems to imply this is meant to replace characters that were killed by precision attacks.
Yeah, which is the same name of the other one where when your warlord died, a different guy became your warlord. But I'm not sure about this one. I mean, you can protect a character that way. Like, maybe his first bodyguard unit was destroyed, but he's still up. He goes to your spare unit.
Also true, but it requires you to have spare units to take in a detachment where you're mostly focused on
taking leaders,
leaders. So it's like it's a strat that doesn't really lean well into what the detachment is about.
No.
So yeah, and that is it for our detachments. There, like I said, there are 4, which. It, on one hand, it doesn't surprise me. On the other hand, we get several pages of here are the different shield hosts in the army and how differently they handle things. And it's like, this would have been an opportunity to do like those 5
I'm fine with just having these 4. I mean, true, it would be kind of cool to break out all the little flavors, but you didn't do that for every single Space Marine. I mean, you did it for a lot of them, but not everyone. And then I could just shut it.
There's a reason why Space Marines have 8.
Okay, never mind.
No, they're because they have the generic one. They had like 6 others, and then they have the veterans.
Okay.
So you could have had 6 detachments out of this, and by doing 5 and then. 7, do like the Talons, do the different shield hosts, and then do Null Maiden. And I think that would have been more interesting. Like these
feel like your generic 4 how they fight. You either fight together,
yeah,
you fight like separately, or you just get your heroes.
And it's fine, it's okay, it's not like it feels like they should have one other thing, or maybe it's because some of these just like Shield Host feels very watered down. Null Maiden Vigil suffers against anything that's not a Psyker. Well, and
it's a flavor one only.
And the Champions one is kind of a flavor one only also, because it's just not going to have the tools.
And my other problem with that one is looking at the Space Wolves one, I'm going back to that one where they want you to focus on characters to do epic deeds and all this stuff, which is very Space Wolfy. But on the battlefield, on the table, it just doesn't hold up, because I'm still sad about that, because I wish Space Wolves.
Right.
It makes sense for like, oh yeah, I've got this and it's great for telling stories and all that, but the game is now more objective based than, I mean, you can still get some neat stories out there, but I mean, having a full detachment that's just about your epic heroes, I don't think it works in this edition so far.
No, I don't think it does. So, as far as data sheets, there were a number of changes, and sadly, this mostly hit the characters, which is another downside to the our champions detachment. Let's see. And again, I'm not going to talk about points changes because we don't know yet. So we've got Trajan Valoris, who big changes there. He lost his fight's first option for his moment shackle, which was one of the main reasons people took him. I mean, he's also a very good character. Also, his ability, the Captain General ability, which allowed you to ignore any modifiers except for those that affected saves, now only affects ballistic skill, weapon skill, or to hit roll modifiers. So anything that would affect, like, to wound or things like that, he cannot ignore, can't ignore anything else. So it's just to hit things. That's a minor bug, but, or, you know, minor nerf, but the losing the fight's first one does hurt him quite a bit, because I would be fine if the one, like, the one named character in the Custodes army had the once per battle or twice per battle in Arc Champions
he's fights not the first. Only named one. There's other names.
Well, that's true. There's Valerian.
Yep.
And technically a Leia, sure, but
the big bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, I gave you that one.
Yeah. The shield captain, he had the master of the stances ability, which before allowed you to pick two out of the three stances. It's been rewritten to say both. Now it's just you have both stances up. That's fine. That's just harmonizing how the rules work. And his castellan axe now hits on twos instead of threes. So that's good for him.
I'll say that's a change for the entire army. So anytime there's a castellan axe, they got better with it. They can now hit on two ups for all of them.
Yay. And then, let's see. And this is a note. This is not a change because the rules in the units are not changed. But this is just a note that strategic mastery, the ability that lets you use a strat for zero CP, even if it's already been used before, remember that will only work on battle tactics. That's why I've been bringing it up, because all the shield captains have that ability and it only applies to battle tactics. So that's why I was like, oh yeah, Arc Champions, where you would be taking a lot of shield captains, you don't get to use that rule on anything other than generic strats.
Hey, I can do command rerolls.
You can. That's about it. That's going to be the main thing you're going to be using that on.
The main thing I use it on for now, it feels like. Oh.
Right, yeah. And then he also gained, because the new model has a Melta spear, the Pyrethite spear is a 12-inch ballistic skill 2, 1 attack, strength 9, AP minus 4, D6, Melta 2 spear, which has all the same problems as every Melta weapon in that it sucks against actual armored things that have strength, that have toughness 10 or more.
I mean, and as we were saying, Custodes got a new model. I'm seeing the air quotes here. They got a new weapon profile on a shield captain. That's the only new thing they really got.
There is no a model. Dedicated shield captain model before, and now you have one.
Okay, I guess that's fair, because he was just use a model that you made from all the other sisters.
He looks like Danny DeVito in power armor.
I mean, isn't he the one we thought was a Votan?
Yes, he is.
I like to think that it's harkening back to the original Rogue Trader awkward squatting minis. So.
No, we've already done all the squats that would need to happen. No more. We're not getting rid of these.
Yeah. No, I mean, just like all of the old, like, Rogue Trader Marines, all are in this weird, like, crouched, hunching, like, squatting position. So I think it's just it just harkens back to that. It's connecting the model back to the history of the older game.
Yeah, it's not. 10,000 years old.
Yeah, he's got bad knees. Anyway.
Let's see, the shield captain in Alaris Terminator armor, he lost his fight on death on a 2-up. That was an ability that was just built into him. That is gone. It has instead been replaced with R, Might, and Adamantine, which is a once per battle, reduce all incoming damage attack or on attacks to 1 for like for the phase. So that's not bad.
That's useful.
He's got 7 wounds.
Right, and if you know that big stuff's going to be shooting at him instead of like a horde of orc boys, that's a good thing to have. And then use the strat and the champions to do it again later in the game.
I mean, yeah, for an arc champions, like the shield captain Alaris Terminator is not bad. He is kind of hamstrung by the fact that he is a Terminator, meaning he has a 5-inch movement, but...
But he's got 7 toughness.
He does have 7 toughness and 7 wounds and a 2-up, 4-up. Although everyone has a 2-up, 4-up, so yeah. The Terminator armor just gives him the extra wound,
wow.
Pretty much.
Now I think that he has more toughness than the bike. That surprises me.
That is weird, yeah. Because it's one case where the man or woman, let's be fair, is no tougher than the thing that they're riding.
I'm wondering if that's a misprint and the 7 should be on the other one. I don't know. We'll see.
Let's see. Because Virtus Praetors were always T6.
Okay.
So I don't think that changed.
Okay, let me get the old thing of that one. Now I'm curious. No, old Terminator had 7 toughness too. So yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
He's just beefy.
The shield captain on Dawn Eagle jet bike. He's always had this, you know, in this edition, he's always had the sweeping advance rule, which allows you to, at the end of the fight phase, you can make a normal move if you're not within range. Like, you can either fall back if it's in engagement range or make a normal move if you're not in engagement range. That's the same as it was, but it also had an additional rule that gave you a 6-inch consolidation instead of a 3-inch. That's gone. You still only consolidate 3 inches if you're a shield captain on jet bike.
I mean, the problem with it is it's still the ranged weapons aren't good. And so you want to get into melee. Yeah, I'm still not. Like you said, Rob, the whole strength 9 is a problem.
Yeah, it really is. Blade Champion, he lost Legacy of Combat, which gave him the ability to use a free strat. So that does differentiate the Blade Champions from Shield Captains. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. And instead, they took his Martial Inspiration rule and split it off into Swift Onslaught and Martial Inspiration. Swift Onslaught lets you reroll charge rolls. Martial Inspiration lets you, once per battle, charge in a turn in which you advanced. The downside is Swift Onslaught, that half of it used to also allow you to reroll advance rolls, and that is gone. Valerian, the other named shield captain character, or the one named shield captain, because Trajan Valoris is not a shield captain.
Correct.
He still, like, his one change, because he's actually, you know, he's solid. He's got a Phenopain 6 up. He's got a better spear than everyone else. He's got, his gun is... better than, or it's the same as most Guardian Spears, although he has one extra attack on it, I believe. Yeah. But his thing is, like, he allows you to, when somebody is fighting him, he worsens their AP by 1 in melee. That's cool. That was still there. He also has the Hero of Lionsgate ability. Once per battle, when making a hit roll, wound roll, or saving throw for this model, you can change the result of that roll to an unmodified 6. He also used to be able to re-roll those, like once per turn, and that is gone. So he's weaker. The Knight Centura and all the other Sisters of Silence, they all have had the Daughters of the Abyss ability, which in the index gave them Feel No Pain 3 up against psychic attacks. Makes sense. They're Sisters of Silence. They're effectively immune to psychic attacks. All of those abilities gained Feel No Pain 3 up against mortal wounds as well. We'll see if those also end up applying to devastating wounds. Although, since like psychic abilities, like when they're overcharged, do devastating wounds, they would still have the benefit there. We'll see if that gets updated to be consistent with other FMPs against mortal wounds. But it's nice to see they all got that 3 up.
I hope it does, just because then these would be like the tankiest things on all these special attacks, and then you just hit them with Bolt or Fire and they fall down.
Yeah. Let's see. Alea, the named Sisters of Silence character, she is pretty much the same. She gained the same, like, Daughters of the Abyss upgrade. The one thing that surprised me for her is that her sword went from anti-psyker 4 to anti-psyker 5. And I'm not sure why they downgraded it, other than the Vigilators got the same downgrade, which still seems weird. It's like, they're the anti-psyker thing. Why make them worse at fighting psykers?
Don't know, but
I'm still pleased she gets fights first for her unit if she's leading one.
Yes, she is the one source of fights first. And she had that in the index, so...
Right. She kept it. She, as opposed to so many people that lost it.
Right. The one character that really no custodian players were taking because she didn't work with anything else they had. So sad. Otherwise, none of the custodian units appeared to change other than like the castle and axe change that you brought up. But they all pretty much stayed the same. Custodian guards let you reroll wound rolls on an objectives and reroll wound rolls of one all the time. Wardens allow you to kind of keep characters safer by if the strength of the attack is greater than the toughness of the unit, subtract one from the wound rolls. And once per battle, they can get a four-up feel no pain. That's cool. Alaris custodians, they're terminators, reroll wound rolls against characters, monsters, or vehicles, and can play the Grey Knight unteleport, reteleport shenanigans. Vertus Praetors are still really suffering, and the fact that their unit is now, they were capped in the balance data slate, but the codex is consistent with that. They are capped at 3. Really makes their Quicksilver execution, where they fly over people and do mortal wounds, really hurt because it maxes out at 6 because they can only fly over with 3 models. And the Venerable Contemptor Dreadnought is unchanged, and the Venerable Land Raider is unchanged. And also, as you pointed out, Dennis, has Marshal Kata.
Can take a fighting stance.
The stupidest use of the rule in the entire book on a unit that makes no sense. I just want to see like, that you're going to run a mechanized
custodes.
Well, okay. Well,
you might have to just to have the last cannon.
Well, okay. So here, yes, you. I'll say one. You do because that's your best like anti big thing in the army. But no, me and a friend were like joking even before this codex hit. We were like, oh, it'd be cool to have like Sisters of Silence. And then when we got this, I started looking it up. It's like, oh well, I could do Sisters of Silence. I could do the blades are actually good. And, well, what's a delivery system? Well, there's the Rhino, but then you have to get out of the Rhino. You can't charge till next turn. Land Raider has the assault ramp still. So I could put, like, my Vigilators inside the Land Raider because it just says I can hold up to 6 Adeptus Custodes infantry models, and these are Adeptus Custodes infantry. I mean, it's weird having just 6 Sisters of Silence in this huge Land Raider as opposed to, like, more of them. But then I can have them go out and assault. And then if I do it right, I could assault close so they're still within 6 to get the +1 reroll because this is technically a custodes model that is not a sister. So yeah, I want to try that out. I'm going to try that out, see how it works. And yeah, then if somebody comes up to the Land Raider, I'm like, yeah, I could tie you too. So yes, I'm going to have some fun with this.
Yeah. And then as I mentioned, the sisters, like the Executioner Great Blades downgraded to Anti-Psyker 5 up on the Vigilators. Everybody got the Daughters of the Abyss upgrade, including the Rhino is better. It's also got a Hunter-Killer missile as a one shot. Like that's not
Rhinos have that right now, don't they?
Yeah. So yeah. Like that, but I'm saying like that's
another big
that is thing. Actually yeah, that and the Hunter Killer missile is the strongest thing in this army, as far as like.
Well, and as you said, since the Rhino is actually a Sisters of Silence Rhino, you could like Rhino spam a little bit and have those help do some battle shocks.
Yeah, no, you'd have to like you really for if you're doing a Null Maiden Vigil, you'll want to spam, as many Rhinos as you can.
Like, or maybe have one Land Raider for the Vigilators and then have the Witch Seekers and the Prosecutors in the Rhinos. So then way you can actually like have an assault vehicle and have the others that have a firing deck that the Vigilators can't use because swords don't go through windows.
Right. So yeah.
The Imperial Guard would like to disagree with you. Swords can absolutely go through windows.
Drive closer so I can hit it with my sword.
Oh my.
So yeah, that is the codex as far as like units, or, data sheets and detachments. And yeah, there's no question this is a weaker book than what they had in the index. Even with the index errata, this is a weaker book.
I would say, and I think we had this conversation earlier, so which is weaker, this or Dark Angels or Tau or Adeptus Mechanicus? I mean,
Mechanicus, I think, is still weaker just because of the overall quality of, because I, the quality of units, like the individual units in the Custodians side is very solid. Like they are still hard to wound at it with a 2-up, 4-up and T6 at minimum. They are still like bricks to deal with, but they're going to be small bricks. They're all capped at like 3 or 5, depending on what you know, which units you have. And they just don't have the survivability unless you bring in Talons of the Emperor, in which case you're devoting part of your points to very squishy support, effectively support units. And, it'll be interesting to see what people do with this. As I mentioned earlier, like people have already started like, well, I'll splash in a knight to give me some more, you know, firepower that has a bit more survivability just by virtue of being very tough. But this is an army that with smaller units and less survivability is going to struggle to hold objectives. Like yeah, go ahead.
The best way for them to hold objectives is take the shield host and use the sticky objective thing. Mm-hmm. And then you're not splashing things in then. Yeah.
Right. But the shield host is just not great. That the martial mastery rule could have been cool, and they botched it by making it once per battle. I think this is still it's a better army to play than Mechanicus, also because Mechanicus has the worst dollar to point value because their models are very cheap point wise and not cheap dollar wise. Whereas yeah. Custodes is still a pretty easy army to build for, by comparison, relatively inexpensively.
Right. And I guess Dark Angels would be still better than both of those because most people are playing the Dark Angels out of the Space Marines Codex. So
yeah, they have a lot more options for being better than these do. So Custodes, is this the worst Codex? I've seen that. Like, this is the worst Codex of 10th edition. I think it's in the running. It's in the running for weakest compared to, because I think Mechanicus has, the thing about Mechanicus is you still have the ability to flood the board with models, and you just don't with Custodes.
I mean, you kind of could, but then you're taking the null main detachment to do the flooding, and those die just as easily as Mechanicus, if not easier.
Right. Yeah. Because Mechanicus tends to have like Feel No Pains or Invulnerables built in that the sisters just don't. This is if you're a Custodes player, this is a rough go. And I do feel like the split between GW Prime and Forge World is hamstringing this army, because this could have been an opportunity to bring in like plastic versions of like the Caladius or any of the Grav tanks, even the better Dreadnoughts could have been interesting.
Oh, yeah. Telamon is still one of my favorite Dreadnoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Bringing in a Telamon or the couple of the variant Contemptors even could have been big for this. And like I said, I'm still waiting to see if the other shoe drops and they put that stuff into Legends. Because because that's what people have been leaning in competitively, and that would basically be saying this army is not meant to be played in any competitive sense. This is a fluff army. Play this for fluff. Play this for narrative reasons. And
I mean, before the Forge World stuff was really a big thing, it was really only played for fluff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like this is a very downpowered army. Like, this army is nowhere near as powerful as it was before.
Well,
and
we're going the other one, Rob.
Yeah, this is where we're going into the other discussion. Is this what we have asked for? Because one of the big complaints in past editions of the game, and this goes back all the way to like I'd say 6th edition, because in like we saw a little bit in 5th edition, because but
like it felt like a much longer tail because codexes came out like once, you'd get like once a year, maybe twice a year, a new codex. Starting with 6th edition and continuing into 7th and then 8th with its reset and into 9th and then 10th with its reset, even then, like, or at least up until 10th, let's say up until 10th, we went into this cycle of codexes were always increasingly powerful. They could always do more. They always had more tricks. They had better stats than and better rules than the ones that came before. And we have seen that, like, 9th edition, we had the problem of the codexes that came out first, like Death Guard and Space Marines, often suffered badly by the middle of the edition because all the stuff that had come out later was better yet. How long did we have, like, oh, Mechanicus is the big thing now. No, wait, Harlequins is the big thing. No, wait, Crusher Stampede Tyranids are the big thing. Oh, no, wait, Leagues of Votan are so powerful we have to nerf them before they come out.
But I think the other part of that, though, is also how we blame GW for, oh, you're releasing a new model. Oh, you've overpowered it, so that way it sells. And I know at least with the Dark Angels, they didn't do that. All the models that came out were very underpowered. And I think that's one of the things that shocked people because we were so used to GW. If it's a new model, they made a power increase on it, which they then would nerf like in the next balanced data slate. But you had like a few months of the new model just being crazy, which goes along with new codex coming out. But Yeah, I think that's one of the other things that have shocked and surprised us.
Yeah. And the biggest problem is like the power creep cycle was bad. It was very bad for the game. But now we're seeing an issue where not all the indexes were on the same power level when they dropped. Obviously, Eldari was stupid strong at first. Custodes were stupid strong for a bit. Now, a lot, like, some armies have codexes. And other than, I'd say, Necrons, which is mostly overpowered by the virtue of, like, Satan being way undercosted, which is a relatively easy thing to fix by just increasing the cost on them. But, like, Necrons are probably hitting above their, above where they should be. But other than that, most of the books have been pretty even, maybe even on the weaker side. And the problem is, power creep is bad. Power deflation may also be bad just for morale, because suddenly it's like if you're a Mechanicus, there's a lot of Mechanicus players. Like, there's some who are like, I am playing Mechanicus because I like Mechanicus. That's what I'm going to play, you know, rain or shine, come hell or high water. But there's also the people who are like, well, I'm playing Mechanicus because I feel it plays kind of cool and I think it could be good. And then, or they were playing Mechanicus because they liked how it played in 9th, and then 10th comes out and it was lackluster. And then their codex comes out and they're hoping, okay, well, this will fix the issues with the index. And it's like, no, it just pretty much kept them where they were. Dark Angels, they got hit by so many unit nerfs and so many lost models that it's just like they're downgraded. And now Custodes, like, their rules just got beaten over the head with a nerf bat.
And I'll say this is two things. The first thing I'm going to get into is I do think this is what we asked for in the past, because I think people got tired of whatever the next codex was. Oh, that's the big thing. Everyone's going to go play it. It's going to dominate until the next codex after it comes out. And we'd seen that cycle since, like you said, like since about 7th edition. And that led to power escalation, people getting shot off the table. And we're like, well, whoever goes first normally wins because they've got the more firepower because everything's escalated. And the game became who could shoot the other guy off the table first. And I think GW listened to us complaining about that. And their answer was reset, make things harder to kill off the table, unless you're like infantry. and make the game a more strategic objective game. And they've done that. And the other half of that is what we're feeling now until the third shoe drops, I guess, is that each codex that comes out has not been power creep for the most part. They're just kind of staying the same, if not less, to maintain the balance that they've started with at 10th edition. Which the other point then is when you get a new thing, you want to say that, oh, this is my new thing. Isn't it awesome? Let me show you what I can do. And unfortunately, with this deflation of power, so to speak, I don't say it feels bad, but it definitely, it makes you less wanting to use the new models on the table because, yeah, like Dark Angels, I the only one I'm using is Azrael because he's the only one that actually provides benefit to the army. I mean, the Lion doesn't, as much as I hate saying that. The Deathwing Knights, as much I'm still using them in Crusade, they're overcosted, so it just makes them hard to use. And it makes you feel like something's lacking, something's lackluster. And that's going to be a concern going forward because now people are going to not be looking forward to getting a codex anymore. They'll be like, I hope my codex doesn't come till late unless you're Emperor's Children because you don't have one. but it's that feeling of like joy, like, hey, here's my new stuff that I feel like we're now missing in 10th edition.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And while I do think the codexes have been pretty good at introducing thematic ways to play.
Oh, totally.
There's definitely no lack of flavor involved unless you're Tau. Still bitter. And I say, I keep harping on that point, but it's like you look at all the other codexes that had been released up to that point, and they've all had more options than Tau. And I still think they kind of, they painted themselves into a corner by saying, well, your flavor is one of the two battle philosophies. Oh, wait, there's only two of them. What else do we do? And then the other ones were, well, we've got the Kroot and we've got a battle suit detachment and that's it. And that's kind of like what we have here. It's like, well, we've got the mixed one and then we have the all custodies and the all sisters. And then, oh, I guess we'll do a character one. And so I think this book kind of falls in that same trap of, well, we thought of our army too binarily.
I'm going to say I'm okay with it here because in my mind, this is the what they have. But for Tau, right, I will agree with you that it would have been cool to expand out into another philosophy. I mean, I'm still going to lean into Kevin here of maybe have those two, but have a more chaos-y or a more melee focused Tau that has gone even further one direction.
Well, like a Farsight Enclaves would have been like, yeah. Like a dedicated Farsight Enclaves, yes, detachment would have been fine. Something like, okay, we're going to make crisis suits or like one of the three flavors of crisis suits. We're going to make them battle line or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, there's things you could do for it. But other than like, but for other than flavor, it's like, there's a lot of ways to play it's like, the armies aren't doing on the table. And I think this is where it hits me. It's like, yes, the game is moving to a more like strategically focused, holding objectives and taking them, like taking objectives and holding them. That's what the game is about now, less than killing. But the problem is most that other than like sticky objective rules on that certain units have, or they like other than that, everything in the game is based on killing units. Like every ability is based, yep, on how well you can kill other units. And it's one of the things where like 9th edition at least had actions as a thing you could do and encouraged you to like have other things that could happen. And I feel like the design space is still very focused on killing, which is why even though this is supposed to be the more survivable, the more survivable edition, the problem is it's just driven people to, okay, so what in my codex is the killiest because that's the best way to win.
Right. And what happened is all the codexes lost that mid-tier range of gun. You either need like the strength 12 or 14 guns or hunter killer missiles, I mean, or you're doing the small arms fire, which strength doesn't really matter. And you're just doing a lot of it. And right, that's where some of the codexes, I'll say like Sisters of Battle and Custodes, that relied on that strength 9 to be what's trying to get some stuff done. They're the ones feeling it the most. Although I guess technically if you take Land Raiders, there's your last cannons again. Land Raiders, make a resurgence.
They really do. They're like one of the better weapon platforms. I used them a lot in my 1,000-point games for Emperor's Children because it is such a well-rounded vehicle, especially if you have any like assault-focused stuff that they can go inside.
Like six Vigilators. Oh.
Yeah. Hey, five possessed plus a master of possession coming out of a Land Raider has gotten some work done for me.
I mean, I will believe you. Sure. So that gives me hope that my theory on this will actually work.
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting where they're at. When they launched 10th edition, there was a lot of talk about reducing codex creep and like, well, keeping the game simplified, but not simple, you know, where it's like, okay, we're going to do kind of this, you know, in and out detachment thing where it's like, you have this, maybe we'll expand it, but we're going to keep it simpler. We're going to keep it, you know, where you just have one, you know, the core of the rules a lot simpler. And I think they've managed to do that. And I think maybe they've been a little bit more conservative on that angle because they don't want to like blow the power curve or like provide all these options. I still remember, I think it was in 7th edition when midway through 7th edition, they basically launched another edition by doing like the Decurion style detachments for Necrons, you know, the detachments of detachments. And like, that's a brilliant idea at the time. But then everything became that, and basically the game became different. And you had this huge gulf of codexes that didn't have it versus codexes that did. In 8th edition, you had this big gulf of index versus codex. And I think what they're trying to do, at least now, is trying to not create that dichotomy again, where it's like an army with a codex is not by default just better. And I think they can fix some of the other like long-term issues through balance and through like FAQs and balanced data slates. So I get what they're trying to do. I do see the downsides. I at least appreciate that they're sticking to what their initial concept for this edition was. So I don't necessarily think it's bad. I do agree that it sucks that your army doesn't do the things you want it to do, but I think this is probably long-term better for the game. At least that's my opinion.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think this is better for the game overall. It's just we're in a period of severe growing pains with it right now.
Yes.
Where we are used to seeing it, like you said, the difference between Index and Codex, or like in 9th edition, the difference between you were running on an 8th edition Codex that didn't have its own secondary objectives, and thus you were bad at scoring the game, versus the armies that had codexes and had bespoke, you know, objectives they could score. And that wasn't necessarily great either. Although then I think they did an interesting job of fixing that in like Arcs of Omen, when it's like, oh yeah, we just moved all the secondary objectives to the packet. So even the faction specific ones. So it doesn't matter what your codex says, everybody has something until you have a codex. Like that was
good.
That was a good way to fix that. This edition, I think we've commented before that the Leviathan mission deck is no longer available for purchase. And I have to wonder if they are re-examining how that's worked out for them and maybe taking a different tact, because honestly, like the last season or two of 9th edition weren't bad. Arcs of Omen was probably the best season.
Rob, 40K. I think they said the seasons were supposed to be about 6 months, and Leviathan has had it 6 months. So I was expecting a new set of rules to be coming out soon. So that one doesn't surprise me, but I will say there is one thing that this whole design philosophy has failed at in my mind is Crusade. There is still a staggering difference between people who have codexes and who do not have codexes, because there's no equivalent for that, because it's a whole second. There weren't Index Crusade rules for every faction. And that's what I've noticed in my Crusade group is the Eldar are still doing good, but his upgrades are only what's the generic ones in the books. He doesn't have those extra things, although the Space Marine one is really bad. The Tyranid one seems to be the best of the what we're seeing, which is why they're skyrocketing in points. Crusade points, that is not. So, yeah, I do think the design philosophy they've got might be better in a long term, but I wish they would expand at least that to keep the balance for all the story or game types, including Crusade, which I really thought that when Pariah Nexus came out, they said there's going to be stuff for every faction. Well, there is if you say that, well, there's generic stuff that any faction can use, but that's not what I was expecting. I was expecting a page of stuff for each faction, and then I would have been happy. That's my, I guess, gripe about Pariah Nexus and why I also think the balance isn't fully there for all the game features, even though I can see where we're going.
No,
the lower power structure that we're just having the growing pains is moving forward.
Yeah. And to that point on Crusade, like, okay, so we finished our narrative league a week or so ago, and we're getting ready to start up a new one, and it was put up for a vote, and people were like, okay, we want to give Crusade a try. And one of the rules we came down with was, okay, because over half the armies don't have their codexes yet, no one is allowed to use codex-specific stuff in Crusade for this campaign because it's not fair. Like, it's absolutely not fair. And I think that same logic kind of applies to what we're seeing with codexes in and balance in 10th edition in general. Is I do think the 10th edition codexes are better at maintaining a sense of balance. We are not seeing the power creep that we did before, but we are seeing some power recession, some power contraction.
De-escalation.
And some books, like, you can tell that the, you know, it's the, you know, the whole no plan survives contact with the enemy and no game survives game balance survives contact with the players. And, yeah. And so we are now dealing with codexes that were written before the edition launched. I think Custodes might be, I don't know what the time frame is on this. It's possible the rules for Custodes may be younger than the edition, but I don't know. But like even then, they could have still been dropping. Like even if they were writing those before the first balanced data slate was out, and they weren't sure what format that like was going to take, which is why we don't see any reference to like devastating wounds on things like that. And the problem with that, and again, this is the problem with physical books, is they cannot be updated in time. And the balanced data slates, like we're supposed to get quarterly point updates and biannual balance updates, which means we aren't going to see anything change until like June or July for game balance, if they hold to that pattern. And then if something has come out and isn't working yet, and they may not, like Custodes, they may not make any changes to Custodes because they may say, well, it's too soon. We've only had like a month or two of data. It's too soon to do anything. Custodes may not get an update until January, just like we didn't see any changes with like Necrons came out and we haven't seen any balance updates on Necrons because, well, it's too soon. We haven't seen any balance changes on Mechanicus because they came out at the same time and it was too close to the end of the year. And like, it's too soon to do any updates. We'll do some updates once we have more data. That means there's a period for like 6 months where Mechanicus is going to suck and Necrons are going to be overpowered. And we are probably going to see 6+ months of Custodes are underperforming and it's too soon to do anything about it. And I think we need to get if this is a game that is meant to be played at all competitively, which GW seems to be leaning into by taking over the ITC, by actively supporting events and trying to do things like Meta Watch and trying to do updates, they need to do those updates more frequently, which is then going to lead to complaints of, well, then why are you releasing unbalanced codexes that are $60 a pop? And that is a valid concern. And it just says we need to get back to, or we need to move forward out of the book model and change how we're doing this. Something has to give because power creep is bad. Power contraction is also bad if it's not handled across the board properly. And while the game is simplified but not simple, we need to maybe re-examine
how the game is actually being played and make sure that the design philosophy is following that and is adjusting to that at the proper speed. Because they're trying to run this game like it's a seasonal, like, computer, like, console or PC game, but they're not releasing it that way. Like, they're not patching it as fast as a seasonal game would be patched, unfortunately. Well,
and we've also complained about when they patch it too much. It's like, I didn't even have it, like, when we were only playing, like, games every 2 to 3 months. It's like, man, I only got to use this once. I didn't be able to try different things, and now it's different again. So it's the balance of people who play all the time versus people that play a lot more infrequently.
Yeah, it's like I said, it just comes down to, like, what is this game? Is this game a game that is meant to be played casually or narratively? In which case, balance isn't as important. Like, in narrative play, balance isn't as critical. In casual, just like basement hammer, garage hammer gaming, balance isn't that critical because you can fudge it. You can, like, your opponent can say, okay, well, yeah, you can play a couple hundred points off, or yeah, we'll house rule this or something like that. Like, that balance isn't as critical. And that's how a lot of games do apply it. Or this is a game that is meant to be played in a tournament setting, in a competitive event, and therefore balance is paramount. Balance has to be maintained, and it has to be constantly maintained. And you have to have people on the ball, and they're kind of trying to play it in that angle, but they're doing it with a game that feels like it's designed for casual and narrative play, and it's tricky. And I think, like, I was watching, speaking of Arbiter Ian from earlier, Arbiter Ian did a video on, like, playing Shattered Legions in Horus Heresy, because they added rules for doing, like, mixed survivors in that. And it's like, yeah, the way these rules work, they're kind of complicated and they're really tricky. And it even says, like, maybe you shouldn't do this if you're playing in a tournament. He's like, I really hope nobody's playing Horus Heresy tournaments. And
yeah, there are people that are, though, I guarantee.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are. But it's just like, there comes a point with, like, the scale of this game and the split focus between narrative and competitive. And I don't want to see either of them necessarily go away, but you got to stake a claim on, like, which one is this? And then handle the rules that way. And if you're going to handle it competitively, then you got to be more on the ball with these rules so that people don't have a feel bad. And so that, like, power, you are better off. Like, it's one thing, like, if an army is spiked in power, like the Eldari were, where Eldari was ridiculously powerful to the point where even Eldari players were not happy. Because nobody wanted to play them, because, or there was only one list to build, because, like, that's the good one, I better play that. Like, nobody had a problem with Eldari being brought down. But it's when things that are in, like, the mid-range get brought down too, or there's a disconnect between design and intent, or design and actual playstyle, that's where this falls down. And I would, like, I do want to see them err on the side of caution, but they need to be ready to bump people up rather than necessarily, like, and yes, that is kind of power creep, but it's like, there should be a midline. They need to be ready, and they have been in the past, but they need to really be ready to jump on it and say, okay, yeah, this faction is not playing the way we want. We need to jump on this sooner. Or even just provide more design commentary online or in PDFs or something, explain, like, this is why we did this to Custodes. This is how we intend Custodes to be played. This is how we intend Dark Angels to be played. This is, you know, like, yes, everybody's playing Dark Angels with the Space Marine detachments. Well, we were really hoping more people would play this. Well, why aren't they? Well, because there's points. Too much Space Marine stuff. Points. Yeah, and, right. Like, they always have that lever, but also, we've discussed 10th edition. The way they do war gear, it's very hard to use points as a fine lever to manage things, which is why we got the Tau fixes we did. So, yeah, I don't know if there's a good solution other than, like I said, figure out what they're building for and be very clear about that and communicate it and stay on top of it one way or another. Well, that was a fun episode. that is definitely a thing we talked about. So we will see. Next episode is episode 300. I think that's technically we're recording it before Midwest Conquest if we stay on our normal schedule, because it would be recorded May 5th and then come out the weekend of Midwest Conquest.
I am going to go ahead and tell you right now that I don't, that I will not be available on the 5th. So,
okay. So let's plan on Mother's Day weekend. We will be recording episode 300. So we apologize if there's an extra week gap between episodes as we adjust our schedules. Also, I'm going to be still busy painting Tyranids, I imagine. I'm making good progress. Same. And there's still a lot to do. So we are busy prepping for an event and for a couple of you getting ready to travel. So we will be back with our 300th episode. Who would have thought we'd make it this far?
It's pretty exciting.
It is.
And it's pretty cool.
I was going to say 301 can be like our take from U.S. Open that Kevin and I will have attended the week after Midwest Conquest.
That is true. I'm looking forward to hearing that. Play some practice games of AOS 4, guys. That's going to be there.
It will be.
Okay.
All right. I don't know if I'll do it.
Fine. All right. Anyway, so that'll be we'll be back with episode 300. But until then, from all of us here at Preferred Enemies, I'm your host, Rob.
Kevin.
Dennis.
And Richard. He's not here, actually. Good night. Good gaming. And yeah, if you're a Custodes player, do your best.
We will.
Preferred Enemies is an Undergopher Radio production and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 Unported License. Our theme music is Metal Slug 2 Super Vehicle 001/2, No Need to Reload, originally by Takushi Hayamuda and remixed by Roataka, courtesy of OC Remix. It can be found at ocremix.com.